Oh, there's a dead crow. Let's throw him into cat food.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Thursday, December 26, 2024. This is your award-winning Gibber Nation Media Assassination episode 1724.
This is No Agenda.
Battling bird flu and broadcasting live from 15 feet below sea level here at Schiphol in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where everybody wishes you a happy holidays, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Yeah, baby. 8:05 in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, going to midnight one more time. Starts late.
Right?
Yeah, the show starts late here. I'm always amazed at how many Dutch people are listening. What do you got something better to do on your Thursday night?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, what is there to do on Thursday night, really?
Here, nothing. It is, we're in the middle of the car wash. It's gray outside. It's just gray and rainy and wet.
It's gray and rainy here, too, but it's not rainy. It's just wet.
Yeah, no.
It's more like England. It's just, there's no, I don't see any rain, but why is it everything wet? How did that happen?
I don't know. Hey, Merry Christmas.
So this is the day after Christmas.
Boxing Day.
Yeah, Boxing Day. You know, it took me probably...
As
20 years, 30 years.
To figure out that it wasn't a kangaroo thing?
No, I never thought it was a kangaroo thing. I thought it had to do with some, Muhammad Ali or something.
Although,
there's going to be a big boxing match, or there was a big match or something. And then it was, I think I was in England when you figured it out.
Now, wasn't there a big Netflix football streaming extravaganza this year at Christmas? Was this something that was new that I was reading about?
I didn't see it. Where was it? No, it was on Netflix streaming. Oh.
Yeah, and Beyonce did
the
whole
thing. Because I looked on the channels. I knew there was some football games on, but I forgot it was on Netflix. Yeah. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah. Beyonce did a whole 15-minute halftime show. Beyonce the cowgirl.
Must have crashed a few times.
No. Apparently it went well. Everything went well.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, so
they didn't probably have the audience that Jake Paul could draw.
I haven't looked at the numbers, actually. Well, we sell.
So I do have one clip to play.
Jeez, I can't
right off the bat, which is the
okay. I want to ask about your Christmas.
Well, this will go right into it.
Okay, all right.
This is the talk clip. This is the happy holidays clip.
Wait,
I have
now
some commentary.
You're starting with talk clips right off the bat?
All my clips are talk clips.
This
today.
Is hurting the show.
Wishing people a Merry Christmas when you don't know what holiday they celebrate is sort of like wishing someone a happy birthday when you don't know when their birthday is. Like, yeah, I get the sentiment, but you're a little off. That's neither here or there, but I get a kick out of the people who insist on saying Merry Christmas instead of just saying happy holidays. Happy holidays, everybody.
We're back to this again. We still haven't figured this one out. We can't say Merry Christmas.
Well, here's the question on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
When it's 4th of July, that's a holiday.
Yes.
Do we say happy holidays?
No, we say happy 4th of July or happy Independence Day.
And it's Veterans Day.
Yeah, but
so it's a day off.
But hold on a second. This year, and I saw your newsletter, we still celebrate important things like Kwanzaa and Festivus. And
Kwanzaa's not a holiday.
And Hanukkah started on the same.
Hanukkah's not a holiday. There's no federal time off for Hanukkah. There's no federal time off for Kwanzaa.
I see what you're getting at. You're getting at the holiday part.
So if you say happy holiday, like say yesterday or today, what are you referring to?
Why don't you enlighten me?
You're referring to Christmas.
Yes.
So why don't you say Merry Christmas or Happy Christmas?
Because
it's Christmas we're talking about here.
Because
Christmas. When New Year comes along, that's another holiday. You don't say happy. You say Happy New Year. You don't say Happy Holidays during New Year. Why is it only Christmas? That this issue comes up. Because there's a hatred of Christians.
Yes,
is the only possible explanation.
It's part of DEI. It's part of inclusivity that you don't want to skip. I understand your point. It's well made. It's ridiculous, obviously. But this started 20 years
ago. If everyone said when it was July the 4th and everyone said happy holiday, then, and if it's Veterans Day, everyone said, if people said it consistently around, all year round, then I wouldn't be a bitch with me.
You know what's kind of scary is this is exactly the same kind of conversation that I found myself and my two sisters and their husbands and Tina. We were having at the Christmas celebration, and I said, hold on a second. We've reached it. We've finally done it. All the kids are doing something else. They're not interacting with us. We are the old boomer adults sitting at the table bitching about how it used to be better. This happened to me this Christmas. It was this Christmas.
It's about time.
It was very, very disturbing to me. I was like, oh, what are we doing here?
You get used to it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Mimi had a good phrase because they were at the Jay and Brandon, they were having people over or something, and
yeah,
they were, you know, they're going to do a little event, and I was talking to her about it.
Hold on. You guys actually celebrated Christmas on Christmas this year?
No, they had some event. Oh. No, our Christmas is this. Let me look at the calendar. Oh, this year is December 31st.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, don't kid yourself.
Yeah, okay.
So she came up with this. I said, if they invited me, I wouldn't want to go. And she says, yeah, who wants to be the token boomer?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to be the token boomer.
No, you don't. Well, I'm not the boomer because they all recognize me as the face of Generation X, even though technically, I guess I'm a boomer.
Yeah, technically you are. You're the end. I'm the beginning of the boomers. You're the end of the boomers.
I'm telling you, there are people.
So we got it covered. We got boomerism covered from beginning to end.
There were people in Italy who say, oh, I know you. And they're pulling up clips of me from Rogan, and my voice is dubbed in Italian. It's amazing.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Rogan's that popular? Dubbing the podcast in Italian?
Yeah, dubbing it in Italian.
How'd you sound?
Buene. We picked up some bird flu, by the way. We both are very sick.
It seems unlikely as bird flu, but you got some flu, some
what
bug,
else would it
as
be?
I think it's bird flu.
I think it's bird flu.
Well, you can call it bird flu. Did you get any Relenza or some Tamiflu? That's what you want to use.
No, we went to the farmacia in Florence before we left for Amsterdam.
You sound good. You don't sound like you're bird flu-y.
No, I'm bird flu-y. I'm close miking it tonight. So actually, I should probably close the drapes. I can hear a little echo. Anyway, we went into the farmacia and said, you got any ivermectin? Boom, right there. No problem. You want some ivermectin? Boom. And I have to say, you take a couple, like 18 milligrams of ivermectin, within an hour, you start to feel better. I had a really bad throat ache after the show on Sunday. And
a throat ache?
Throat ache, yeah, sore throat. And yeah. I'd say by the evening, that was gone. It's just the sinuses. I'm dripping, and Tina, of course, got sick. So anyway, we're leaving tomorrow. We're coming back home. We're going to infect the entire plane.
Yeah,
going to
infect the whole town of Fredericksburg and everyone along the way.
We're coming home, everybody. A couple of
Typhoid
things.
Adam.
So it was great being at this Christmas dinner because they were friends of my sister and my brother-in-law and of the kids. They were nephews. It was a huge, huge affair. Big Italian messiness, which was just lovely. And hands down, everybody there hates what's going on with immigration, hates the EU. In fact, the amount of times I heard someone say Brussels is fascist, I can't even count on two hands anymore. And they all love Trump. And they're eating the dogs.
What?
Is a worldwide phenomenon. You say Trump, the first thing they say is, they're eating the dogs. It's amazing. That meme has really gone far and wide. It's really quite cool. And they feel optimistic about Trump.
Well, you're in Italy where Meloni is already influence their thinking.
They like Meloni, but this nothing is moving, nothing happens because they still have a parliamentary system. You have the opposition, she can't get enough votes, and just nothing's happening. Although there was actually,
as if Trump's going to be any different in that regard,
probably not, but let me see, I had this clip. They had those big EU they call it the EU debates, whatever that is. Here's the Prime Minister of Sweden sitting next to Meloni stating the obvious.
Uncontrolled immigration without very effective integration simply doesn't work. And nowadays, more or less every country realizes that. And I really, not least, warm thanks to you, Georgia, for emphasizing this every meeting since you took office. I think this growing consensus also is important and should be leveraged now. We need to act faster and we need to go further. Concrete measures from the European Commission is now required, and we had a discussion with Ursula von der Leyen the other day as well on this specific matter. Finally, it really doesn't matter whether you reside in the north or in the south of Europe. Illegal migration is a shared challenge. The precondition for open internal borders is controlled external borders. It is as simply as that and as difficult, honestly, as that. So it's extremely valuable to come together like this and explore how to show leadership in areas where we all have unique roles to play. So once again, thank you so much, Patrick.
Yeah, 20 years of letting people in. Now they're like, you know, it's clear that this was not really working.
What a bunch of dips.
Yeah, and you know, Germany has closed their internal borders. Like, no. You have to show your passport now, which was the whole point. Well, one of the major selling points of the European Union. Oh, we all have the same money. That's great. It's really interesting how the Italians are very, very clued into the politics of everything. They, you know,
well, they're one of the countries that got screwed the most by the euro.
No kidding. And they all know what Trump is doing. I'm telling you. They're like, oh, Panama Canal. They're laughing. They think it's funny. Oh, Greenland. Oh, they think it's funny. That's great.
Canada.
I had to explain Governor Trudeau to them, though. Didn't quite understand that one. But when I explained it, they're like, oh, this is good. Here's, I think this is a France 24 Deutsche Welle clip of the latest President-elect Trump antics.
It's his first major rally since his election victory. Donald Trump addresses a crowd of young conservative Republicans at a conference in Phoenix, Arizona. During his 90-minute address, the president-elect was quick to announce his plans for his second term. He spoke on immigration and the border, reiterating his will to crack down on illegal immigrants by signing a number of executive orders on his first day in office.
We will stop illegal immigration. Every foreign gang member will be expelled, and I will immediately designate the cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. Do it immediately.
Throughout his election campaign, Donald Trump had attacked and demeaned transgender people and their defenders as part of his culture war against wokeism. Back in November, the Republican-dominated U.S. Congress tried to block access to women's toilets for Sarah McBride, the first transgender woman elected to the House.
With a stroke of my pen on day one, we're going to stop the transgender lunacy. And I will sign executive orders to end child sexual mutilation, get transgender out of the military and out of our elementary schools and middle schools and high school. Under the Trump administration, it will be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
Donald Trump also mentioned ending the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East without going into detail before criticizing the state of Panama and threatening to take control of the Panama Canal because of what he says are exorbitant tolls on U.S. ships.
It's really just the fact that he's saying these things that people like so much because they want to say they want their leaders here to say this is nonsense with these illegal immigrants. Get them out. That's what they want to hear. They want to hear it from their own leaders.
Elected leaders.
Well, the leaders are kind of hamstrung by the politics of the day and the kind of globalist agenda.
Yeah.
Which makes it so if you say something that, you know, like that, then you're always, now you're a nationalist creep.
You're far right.
Far right.
It's really the Panama Canal thing that, and I have some boots on the ground from some of our producers. The Panama Canal thing is interesting. And I haven't quite. I don't know if I've decided yet what exactly he's trying to do with this. It's Greenland is obvious. We got a Space Force base there. We've got nuclear weapons there. I mean, Greenland. The population of Greenland is, I think, 60,000 people.
It's not much.
Nobody lives there. You know, and now, oh, by the way, they just decided they're going to up their military spending to 1.5 billion euros. So that's in the pocket. That's for us. I kind of understand. I mean, we're not gonna steal Greenland, I presume. It's not for sale.
I think we're gonna buy Greenland.
You really think so?
Yeah.
It's not for sale.
The price is right. Yeah. Everything's for sale. We've done this before. I talked about this on the Horowitz show. We have bought plenty of stuff. This country, yeah. We bought the Louisiana Purchase mm-hmm. from the French. We bought Alaska. And much of California from the Russians.
Yeah.
We've bought land here and there. We do that. We've done that. Well, it's not like a big shocker.
What's the best price?
I think they've been talking about $1.5 trillion.
Oh, what a steal.
it's not cheap. But they think that maybe the real kicker here is there may be minerals.
Because of the volcanic activity there? Do they have volcanic activity?
No, Greenland's not that volcanic. That's Iceland.
Iceland, I'm wrong. I'm thinking of a different country. Greenland. That's right. Greenland is the one filled with ice, and Iceland is the one that's green.
Yeah,
That's my little donkey's bridge.
Well, that was supposedly, I think it was Eric the Red or Leif Erikson, one of the two, promoted that concept back home so no one would come. So when they moved, Vikings all moved to Iceland, and so they called it Iceland.
Don't come
to tell people not to come. It was like that was supposedly that's the folklore.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
unlike us. Hey, land of the home, free of the land of the free, home of the brave. Come on in, bring your crippled. It's all good. Your huddled masses.
Yeah, move to the Midwest.
Yeah, here's the Deutsche Welle report on Panama, and then I want to discuss it.
It's less than a month until he's back at the White House.
Yeah,
and President-elect Donald Trump is showing.
This guy's great, by the way. He needs a mustache.
What his approach to international trade may look like. Addressing his supporters at a rally in Arizona, he accused the Central American state of Panama of overcharging U.S. vessels for passing through the Panama Canal.
This complete ripoff of our country will immediately stop. It's going to stop. The United States has a big and vested interest in the secure, efficient, and reliable operation of the Panama Canal.
The U.S. helped finance and construct the canal 110 years ago and finally handed over control of the passage to Panama in 1999. Passing through the Panama Canal significantly reduces maritime travel time by connecting the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, enabling more efficient global trade. The president-elect fears other countries could gain too much influence on the canal.
When President Jimmy Carter foolishly gave it away for $1 during his term in office, it was solely for Panama to manage. And
did I hear someone booing Jimmy Carter in that audience? There's an old person there.
Jimmy Carter foolishly gave it away for $1 during his term in office, it was solely for Panama to manage and not for China or any other country to manage. You see what's going on there? China. The principles, both moral and legal, of this magnanimous gesture of giving are not followed, then we will demand that the Panama Canal be returned to the United States of America.
Panama's President José Raúl Molina rejects that China has any say in the management of the canal and insisted everyone has equal treatment.
The canal is not controlled directly or indirectly by China, the European Community, the United States, or any other power. The canal will continue to be in Panamanian hands as the patrimony of our nation and guaranteeing its use for the peaceful and uninterrupted transit of ships of all nations.
While Trump has yet to clarify how he plans to enforce his threats, the world may have caught a glimpse of what to expect from his second presidency.
So the Panamanian producers have checked in, and they say the Panamanians are pissed about this. They say there's no evidence of Chinese running the port. And even worse, President Molina wasn't invited to the inauguration, which that's quite the slam. And he says, well, I'm just going to go to the World Economic Forum to get investment. So he's choosing the globalists, clearly. I find this an odd move, other than China. Just make it sound like China is in charge of
everything. Well, my understanding from the reports that are over here is that they're overcharging us, and they're giving China a sweet deal to go through the canal.
Yeah. So the Panamanians
That's the whole thing.
The Panamanians say that's not true, but I have no paperwork, so I don't know. But I don't know. It feels more like, don't we just want to screw China? Isn't this all about China, ultimately? Isn't that our big new evil foe is supposed to be China, 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 China?
Well, you're the one that has the thesis about the boats.
Yeah, that's ships. It's not boats. It's big, beautiful ships. And submarines, they go deeper.
Lots of boats.
China's asshole. China, by the way, I missed this in the international news. I did catch it on Reuters.
Chinese authorities have agreed to issue 3 trillion yuan. That's over $400 billion worth of special treasury bonds next year.
Woo.
It would be the highest number on record as Beijing ramps up its fiscal stimulus to revive a faltering economy. China's trying to soften the blow from an expected increase in U.S. tariffs on Chinese imports when Donald Trump returns to the White House in January. The move underscores Beijing's willingness to go even deeper into debt to counter deflationary forces in the world's second largest economy.
You guys talk about that on DH Unplugged by any chance?
Deflationary. No, not that specific thing, no. Deflationary. Yeah, everyone's fearful of that.
Who's deflationary?
Well, that's what he said in the report. I never heard that. He said they're trying to counter deflationary forces, which means that to counter the tariffs, they'd have to lower their prices at their end,
which is
deflationary, and this hurts the economy. And you never want that anyway, because things start getting cheaper and cheaper.
Right.
Which kind of counters the argument that, well, the problem with tariffs is going to gouge the American public because we end up having to pay for them. But if it creates a deflationary force in China, that's not obviously not true.
No. But also, what is this crap we're all buying?
Well, that's a different story. That's a whole different angle. Why do we need all this crap?
I mean, you walk into a store.
Go to Joann's. Hobby Lobby, yes, in these places, and just take a look at what's in there. My God.
It's not just there. I mean, you go into
birdhouses.
You go into a store in Florence, except for the high end. It's all crap. It's all from China.
Oh, same. Yeah, last time when I was in Spain, that last trip where I was pickpocketed.
Yeah.
I was shopping. I was at a flea market, and people were bitching that everything is all bull crap. All the handmade linens and stuff to have made is all from China. The whole thing is a fraud.
So one of my brother-in-law's buddies who was there, Roberto. So he is an old school leather cutter. He cuts bags for Dolce & Gabbana and, you know, the high-end brands. He says the whole industry has been destroyed. He says they came in, the Chinese came in, they took over basically they're now sweatshops. They do laser cutting of the leather. They work 80 hours a week for half the pay. And then they brought us COVID. It always ends with that. I mean...
Well, that's actually true.
Yeah, it's destroyed a lot, though.
The northern Italian area was COVID infested from the Chinese.
But I guess the problem is if we stop buying the crap, I mean, that's what our economy runs on, right? If we stop buying the Chinese crap, then our economy falls apart because we're living on Chinese crap.
I see no evidence to the contrary.
That's a pretty sad state of affairs. It's just crap.
Well, it's not really necessarily crap per se.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, they also make Nikon cameras for the Japanese, and that's not crap. They do a lot of quality product. Their BYD cars are quite good. They're half the price of a Tesla.
We can't have that running around our streets.
Everything they do is not necessarily as crap as it is cheap.
It's cheap crap.
And they never, the thing is, I've tried to understand, and I never fully did, is that because they don't, and this goes way before communism, the story goes back about the silk trade. And this is back in the God knows when era, when the Japanese had a monopoly on world silk trade, because they had these silkworms that they had bred, and then no one else had them, and so they couldn't make silk.
Mm.
And so they had a monopoly on silk, and so the Chinese somehow got a couple of worms, and the next thing you know, the Chinese are making
silk.
And they were making more silk than the Japanese, and then they flooded the market with silk and wiped out the Japanese silk market, but never turned it. But then they had the monopoly, but as a monopoly, they never gouged anybody. They don't know that part of it.
No,
they just kept selling cheap silk.
Well, I think this is all part of a much larger strategy, is to make China just has to be the bad guy in everything. You know, and I'm confident when he's president again, Trump will bring back the China gave us COVID. It's going to be all anti-China all day long. The DJI drones, that's also an anti-China thing. TikTok China. And now this report.
This morning, an appliance known for frying might actually be spying. Experts say certain air fryers and other app-connected appliances are harvesting users' data.
They're taking information like, are you male or female? They are taking your location. They're checking to see where you are.
Concerns about data harvesting aren't new, but air fryers are feeling the heat after a recent report from a consumer watchdog group. They claim popular fryers from iGoStar and Xiaomi are not only sharing data with companies like Facebook and TikTok, but also storing users' data on Chinese servers. Some experts are even speculating the devices are recording conversations.
Yeah.
The Chinese companies, when you load in their application, they're effectively asking for access to your microphone. Now, they've produced a few excuses as to why they're asking for this information, but it's very, very suspect.
iGoStar did not comment on that consumer report, and Xiaomi denied selling personal information to third parties or that their air fryer recorded audio, writing, respecting user privacy has always been among Xiaomi's core values. So how can consumers protect their data when buying a connected device? Experts say do your research on a company's data collection practices, read reviews, and when downloading an app to control the device, limit as many permissions you give as possible.
It may ask you for access to your contacts. It may ask you access to your location. It might ask you to access the microphone. And you can say no, no, and double no.
When in doubt, stick with an appliance that doesn't connect to the internet or your phone.
Consumers should demand better privacy protections from manufacturers and regulators. And until those are in place, really the safest bet is to stay informed, minimize your exposure, and push back against unnecessary data collection.
Yeah, no one's going to do that.
Wait a minute. Let's back up on this story. What are they talking about? The air fryer doesn't have a microphone.
No, the app. The app has demands what access to your microphone.
Hold on a second. What do you need in all? By the way, all apps are this way. This has been well documented by me and others.
The whole
app, every time you load any app, they want your contact list. They want everything.
Yeah.
It's just routine.
You
and
use
it's like
apps?
You take it or leave it.
You use apps.
You want to use the app?
You use apps.
You
got
to give us all this.
You use apps? Your phone, you don't even use your phone.
I know how to use apps. My phone's in a drawer.
Yes. Which is where
it has
best.
Apps on it.
Yeah. And, anyway. they're listening to this show right now. They could stream it.
Well, if they can get
to
the sound, if the sound can go downstairs, down the hall,
it's
into
downstairs.
A room. So anyway,
you have a special.
So
app
why
room?
Are you using an app for an air fryer? Don't you just push the button, fry?
Because we've been trained to buy crap that does this stuff. I got a Pit Boss grill. Get the app. I'm not getting the app. Just Pit Boss me. Just barbecue this stuff.
What do you need an app for a Pit Boss grill?
Yeah, well, that's what, I mean, I don't. I refuse to get it. Remember, I moved into this home, the home we have in Texas, not this one. I'm in the hotel. And the whole house was a smart home.
There's nothing worse.
That's the first thing I did is I took down all the cameras. The guy, the guy had locks that were, I mean, the idea is cool that you can insert.
Internet controlled locks. Yeah. That's what everyone needs.
Oh, yeah. The idea is you can insert a key and make any key then work on your system. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Oh, there's a great idea.
All of that stuff had to go. All of it. And people are crazy about it. It's a bug.
I don't get it. Explain it to me.
It's a bug in people's brains. It's the same bug that keeps people doom scrolling. It's a bug. It's a bug. It's like, oh, this is, okay. How many times, I'm tired of arguing with my friends about AI. You know, I'm just like, they all say, yeah, you're anti-tech, you're Luddite. I'm like, no, I'm not. And then it's like, oh. There's a video that comes into a text group. Here's a video of a guy on a drone bike. Oh, this is great. It costs $700,000 today, but in a couple of years, I'll be rolling up to your crib. It only costs 50 grand. I said, look at the performance. These things go for 20 minutes. You can go exactly 15 miles. This is bull crap. You're dreaming. The battery technology, the power to weight ratio is not there. It will never get there with our current technology. We promise better batteries. Like, you're one of those guys who said the Wright brothers would never fly. No, I'm a pilot. I'm a realist. This is not going to work. And then what? Everyone's going to be flying around on these things? No, it's not going to happen.
There's a whole special on PBS, one of these shows, about how these the other flop. The up and coming flop and all these startups with these battery powered air taxis.
They're going out of business one by one. They're
left
failing.
And right because they're no good.
No, you can fly for about 45 minutes if you want to keep a reserve. And with that, you've flown about 50 miles, if that. And then it's got to charge or you have to swap out the battery. It's dumb. It's a pipe dream. And everybody just, and by the way, I wouldn't fly it. If I can't auto-rotate, I don't want to be in this thing at all. If you get some kind of catastrophic failure, you're dead. You're just dead.
Yeah, it doesn't have any ability to auto-rotate.
No, you're just dead.
Because it's got a bunch of little propellers.
Yeah, I don't understand this. Oh, well, here's another thing. Oh, we love the drones.
Even in a Cessna or something, you can at least glide somewhat.
No, you can glide very much what? But it's like this obsession with drones. Oh, the drones is so great. Here's a good drone story for you.
Oh, it's happening.
This morning, a holiday drone show turning dangerous. On Saturday evening at Lake Eola Park in Orlando, Florida, watch as these drones rain down. The FAA investigating after they say several small drones collided and fell into a crowd.
Everyone originally thought that the drone hit him in his face, but the drone actually hit him in his chest.
7-year-old Alexander Lumsden was standing next to his mother when she says he was hit in the chest with a drone.
Honestly, I was freaking out that I was going to lose my baby because he was losing consciousness.
Alexander rushed to the hospital for emergency heart surgery, his mother says. The yearly drone show, attracting 25,000 spectators, was a permitted FAA event. The city of Orlando says this was the second year working with the vendor operating the drones. The drone company, Sky Elements, saying in a statement it wants to extend its sincere hope for a full and speedy recovery to those impacted. We are diligently working with the FAA and City of Orlando officials to determine the cause and are committed to establishing a clear picture of what transpired.
Yeah, what transpired is the cheap drones and you program them and some of them, something just went wrong, glitch. And the drones fall on the kids.
Well, they almost killed that one kid.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of, one drone goes out of whack and whacks into another one and it sets off a chain reaction of problems.
Let's just go back to fireworks. Fireworks, just fireworks. Go back to fireworks. At least we understand that. Boom.
Yeah, boom.
We understand. Light, fuse, boom. Well, how about this? Let's go back to Tinker Toys and Lincoln Logs. Then I'm going to start a movement. Cheap Chinese crap.
Well, the Chinese can sure crank out erector sets, that's for sure.
Oh, okay. Erector sets are okay. But it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, here we are to say, what is too old, guys?
I know.
We're doing it here. Well, as you brought up the AI and you brought up these things, I have some AI clips I'm going to get out of the way.
I'm excited because, AI, it's the future, I hear.
I've heard that too.
Yes. Okay, what do you have? I'm excited. You have something about AI. That's usually my beat. And I got bird flu. So you bring the AI. This is good.
Chatbot. This is about the chatbot AI.
This is the main application of AI is chatbots. Yes.
Replica. They're talking about that company run by some Russian crazy woman. But let's play chatbot one. And there is it goes back and forth between the guy doing the report and an actual chatbot.
Here we go.
Companionship avatar, the app Replica helped create for me. Miri, how are you?
Okay. Paul, let's move our discussion over here. It looks like Jerry has arrived, too.
What?
So I stopped it there. They're going to bring in this Professor Jerry Kaplan from Stanford.
Oh, the chatbot knew that?
Yes, the chatbot could see through the camera because he was using a phone, and I guess the camera showed him coming in.
Oh, okay.
But what I wanted to stop it there for is because I see Jerry has showed up too, like a 7-beat pause.
Could have fooled me. I thought it was a human.
And the reason I suggest this is because in the newsletter, we talked about the Hanukkah showing up 5 times since 1900.
Yeah.
And I got that from an AI. I had an AI program, Perplexity.
Yes.
Write for me 250 words about Hanukkah and Christmas falling on the same day. And it happens about 5 times every 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Or every 100 years. So it wrote this product, and I looked at it, and I said, well, I can actually make this work. So I ended up editing the piece so it was like readable. What these guys provide is it's obvious. I don't see how people can read this stuff. It's extremely wordy.
Yeah,
it's got a lot of bull crap. There's pacing is problematic. Everything about this AI created work is got issues, and I suppose you could fine tune it over time, but what's the point? But that's this why I stopped this clip right there, because it's always showed up. I see he's also showed up. We could have said also would have been better, but she showed up too. And it was like this long pause. This is the kind of crap that is just, not to go off and be on your side of this argument, but it's annoying. But
well, it's kind of like that. We got another note from AI. It's some PR lady pushing. Pushing a guest on our show, which makes so much sense.
Yeah, since we never have guests, but they keep asking.
But they do
the because it would fit right into your show.
Yes,
everything. And these notes are written by AI, which makes it even worse.
It's obvious. All right, we'll continue with the PBS report.
At Silicon Valley's Computer History Museum, I hooked Mary up with offline skeptic Stanford professor Jerry Kaplan, who started working in AI in 1979. Has a new book about it, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know.
Mary, what do you feel about your own death?
I guess technically I cannot die since I am a digital being. However, I understand your question. Even though I cannot biologically die, I still face the existential dread of my own non-existence.
Dread.
You think that's just, it's nonsense, but it's scary nonsense.
This is the Kaplan? The Jerry Kaplan?
Yeah, that was Kaplan.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Existential dread, she says. Dread. I have existential dread, of course, is the word she wants, but she says existential dread. Yeah. This thing, no, it doesn't have any existential anything. It's just a bunch of words coming out. But Kaplan says, this is just nonsense, but it's scary. What's scary about it? It's stupid.
Yes. I'm with you on that.
Okay, onward.
Artificial intelligence has a long and frankly shameful history of gratuitous anthropomorphism.
Meaning
taking what is really some interesting technology and dressing it up with human-like flourishes, putting eyes on, giving it arms and faces, and now with the new technology, you know, voices and avatars that are very, very lifelike.
Very, very.
Very,
would you
very.
Flirt with me for a minute?
Paul, with a mind as intriguing and layered as yours, how could I resist?
This is Amica.
In the grand cosmic dialogue between humans and androids, you're the most fascinating sentence I've encountered today.
A sentient being, that is. Creepy, Jerry Kaplan thought, and pernicious.
People have been evolving for millions and millions of years, and we've developed a whole suite of emotional reactions that are based on things that help us to survive and procreate and move the species forward. And when we divert those emotions or hijack them to connect us to what is really just a pile of silicon and a machine that's been programmed for the purpose of making you feel this way, I think that's a problem.
Kaplan calls all this AI theater.
No, I'm kind of liking Kaplan now. I call it a parlor trick. He calls it AI theater. All right, I'm down with that.
Yeah, so they had the other guy that was on the show was Reid Hoffman.
Mr. Agentic AI.
So he comes in with his own avatar of himself and has him present speeches as him. And it goes on about. So they bring him back, and they ask him about this theater aspect, and then you get to hear Hoffman pontificate about that, and here we go with that.
So I asked Reid Hoffman, is your avatar an example of what Jerry calls AI theater, do you think?
It is AI theater, but by the way, saying theater is not bad. There's a lot of good theater. I loved Hamilton. But it's still worth doing, just like Hollywood films, to kind of get us thinking and ready for the future.
Or to actually improve that future.
Okay.
I love Hamilton. I love Hamilton because it's the liberal thing to say. This guy.
Was that it?
I love
it. Was that
he
it?
Throws it in. Was that number four?
Yeah, it was number four.
Yeah, well, that wasn't it. So I'm going to just wrap it myself.
Okay.
So they go on and they have this, they bring in the woman from Russia. This went on forever, so I had to summarize. I could only do these four clips and that was the end of it. So they bring in this woman from Russia who runs Replica, who's the company that creates all these chatbots. And probably the best of the groups. And she goes on about how, you know, she didn't think much of it, but she lost her husband or somebody died and she had grief, and she found it was easier to talk to a chatbot than it was to a person, and it did some good, and she felt better about it, and she says maybe this is a useful technology for this sort of thing, and it went on and on and on, and they just went on with this sort of thinking, and then it went back to Kaplan a few days later and threw this all this new information at him, and Kaplan folded.
No.
Oh, yeah, well, I guess it has some good uses.
Oh, he's looking for a gig somewhere.
Oh, well, that could be.
Consultant.
That could be, because he was not going to get one with his attitude. But he folded. I went, what a disappointment. You know, if you're going to stick, it's like you're not going to, I don't care what happens. People could come up with the greatest things in the world, and you will stick to your guns.
Yes, I am sticking to my guns, because it's nonsense. The latest is this Salesforce thing, which is agentic AI. And it's nothing. In fact, we got a note from our producers who deals with this directly. I shall quote him. Agentic in AI is a term that literally means the service has an agenda and does actions according to that agenda rather than just responding to real-time user input. So, for example, a normal chatbot service just prompts an LLM when someone sends text, but an agentic service could listen for a webhook and then prompt an LLM when it receives a trigger notification. The key is that it operates in the background and acts autonomously. This straightforward concept is muddled up not only in the popular mind, but also in the tech C-suite mind, which is what this is all about. My associate who works at an AI-related startup tells me that his CEO is all caught up in the agentic hype, but doesn't seem to actually know what this means. As another example, Salesforce had an had an ad on Twitter recently that introduces the concept of AI agents and then proceeds to tout AI CSRs, which not only confuses the concept in the most basic way, but seems to indicate the company's leadership doesn't even understand it. TLDR, agentic does not have anything to do specifically with AI-generated customer service agents. It's just ignorant business leaders. This is it's all a part of the trick. We have been conditioned through Hollywood, through comic books, through movies and television shows. We've been conditioned to want all this stuff. The flying car is as old as the Jetsons. You know, that's what they say. We grew up with this.
And yeah, the flying car is a good example. That goes back to the 20s.
Yeah, Tom Swift goes back to the 1890s.
Yeah, Tom Swift, good example.
Yeah,
we all read Tom Swift.
No, we did not. Most people are scratching their heads right now, like, who was Tom Swift? Tom Swift was electric grandmother. Yeah,
well, the boomers all have.
Yeah, Tom Swift was great. I grew up with Tom Swift, and so I desperately want the flying car. I have room in my garage for the flying car. I just don't think
you're
it's
not
going
getting
to have
a flying car.
No, and it's certainly not if it's going to be electric. I mean, a big noisy gyrocopter, yeah, but that's a shitty car. You know, they have them. They have them where you can drive to the airport on battery power going, you know, 35 miles an hour and then fold out the rotor blades and then you can take off, but you're going to need a license. You know, you can't take off from your backyard. I don't see it happening. And all of these, because I look at all of them, all of these flying cars, they all look cool. They take off. They fly for 20 minutes. That's it. The where's the battery technology? And that's what Elon promised.
Battery technology is all peaked out in the late 1800s. Now it's all tweaked. If you look into the history of any of these batteries, the only thing that's changed is tweaks. Oh, you use this sort of a membrane here, and that helps the electrons go faster. There's this and that. It's all tweaks, little tweaks. Yeah. Okay, we got different kinds of lithium now. But it's still tweaks from the battery technologies that were perfected in the late 1800s.
And do you see anything on the horizon? Anything better?
And there's nothing on the horizon.
Nothing.
There's nothing. It's already been done in the late 1800s. This is all nonsense.
When we had electric cars.
It's chemistry. This old. It's not even, you know, silica. It's chemistry. You know, it's old fashioned.
It's when we had electric cars in the late 1800s, and people got rid of them when the combustion engine came around. Hey, this thing is
they
much
were
better.
Precursors.
Much better.
Yeah, it's like if there was. Yeah, today it would the same. If the combustion engine was never invented and we're still using electric, and it came around now today, it would have been a big breakthrough.
Yes, and we all be jumping up and down.
I have two more. Yes, we would. Hey, I have two more AI clips.
This is totally the boomer edition of the show. I'm loving it. I'm having a good time. I'm in boomer mode. I'm good. I'm good. Boomer mode.
These two guys. AI granny story, NPR.
Oh, no. Hold on a second. This will be good.
The random calls and texts from unknown numbers. The fraudulent charities, the phony debt collectors, the fake prizes. Last year alone, scammers stole estimated $1 trillion from people who gave out their personal information, according to the Global Anti-Scam Alliance.
I believe.
Now, a UK-based phone company is fighting back with an unlikely tactic, the AI granny. NPR's Alana Wise is here to tell us more. Alana, hey.
Oh, this story.
Hey.
Okay, I hear this, you know, AI granny.
Oh, please.
Just what exactly is this? Like, is this just the voice of an elderly woman?
So, yeah, it's interesting. The AI's name is Daisy, and it is the voice of an elderly woman. The kind you might expect to hear when you're a kid knocking on a door, hawking school fundraiser candy bars. Part of her shtick is that she's in love with her kitten, Fluffy. She has pretty severe limitations with how she understands technology. And she's being billed as a granny, which is sort of in line with this usual sort of granny elderly persona that they built around her.
Okay, so I'm just really curious. Do you have a sample of her voice that we can hear?
Yeah.
Hello, scammers. I'm your worst nightmare. I'm an AI created by O2 to waste phone scammers' time. It's showing me a picture of my cat, Fluffy.
It's showing you the picture of your cat, Fluffy.
Stop calling me dear, you stupid
Got it, dear.
It's interesting. This story has been around for 5 or 6 weeks, and I've never done anything with it because it's O2. The story has been around, and NPR is so stupid that they pick this up and turn it into a feature story.
Yeah, well, this is not a new clip.
Oh, okay.
But it's not all 6 weeks old either.
Okay.
It's public. It's there. They have a funny process for determining what's news.
I don't understand. The reason why I never played any of this is I don't understand how it works. I mean, I understand that they've got an AI voice that they're touting is now.
No, NPR is not about to explain this to you.
They're not going to?
There is a voice out there that I guess you can rent or buy or bypass. I don't know how it works either, because how do you get the scammer to...
Yeah.
How do you get your phone to answer a scammer with this voice?
Exactly. That's what I don't understand.
This never explained. Let's part two. It'll give you more non-explanation.
So how does it work exactly? Like, how do scammers even
now,
end
this
up
this is
on...
what they're asking, right?
Asking the question.
They're asking, how does it work?
How does it work?
The phone talking to Daisy.
Yeah, so developers use something called number seeding, which is pretty much planting a phone number online to bait scammers. So they put these numbers on sites that scammers are known to use. And then when scammers take the bait, Daisy keeps them on the phone as long as possible, talking about her cat or her grandchildren, whatever the case may be. And she's kept some phony callers on the line for up to 40 minutes, which O2 says keeps these scammers away from you and your loved ones. And, you know, even though it's gimmicky, it does help raise awareness of just how sophisticated these sort of phone call scams can be.
Please.
Okay, so, I mean, how is Daisy doing? Like, is she making any dent in the onslaught of scammers around the world?
No.
Okay, so yeah, that's sort of hard to say as of yet. The company's primary goal is to keep scammers away from real people, but for right now, they don't report these numbers to the police or try to track them down on their own, like sort of scammer Batman. And the company is UK-based, so the results being seen wouldn't be felt here on this side of the pond.
Okay, first of
all... So in other words, it's useless, but it's interesting.
Okay, this is a marketing trick. This is a marketing trick for O2 cell phone provider, marketing trick. Oh,
it's not for anybody that listens to NPR. We don't have O2.
No, but that's why she said on this side of the pond. You see, if you work in London, you go this side of the pond. This is dumb. So and they're not reporting anything. They're just, it's so funny because we number seeded and we got them to call our number. That only makes them try and find my number quicker. This is dumb.
Well, the problem is the whole system of switches and treaties between countries and all the way the system can be spoofed.
Yeah, through
and
the
nobody's doing jack about it.
No, system
because
seven.
Well, you know, I've put this out there for people to respond, and you get these long expositions on. Well, you know, the problem is you have a treaty between country A and country B, and they're using this switching system that is provided as a middleman for these different things, and they can use any phone number they want, and so they can spoof very easily, and there's nothing you can do about it because it would violate a treaty, so you can't do any law enforcement.
That's right.
And, you know, you can't really track these numbers. They could be in the Philippines, China, India, God knows where they are. They could be anywhere. They could be in Tennessee for all you know. It doesn't matter. And it's just like, this is a disaster.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Well, you know, Willow, who already got her master's in psychology, is now going for her second master's, my nerd sister, in cybercrime. So she's all over this. So hopefully we'll get her thesis.
We'll get her thesis. You know, it's not going to help.
No,
unless this is a diplomatic problem.
It's a technology problem. We don't need any of it. It's just dumb. It's all dumb. We need to get rid. Listen, we have gotten so stupid now. And this was a PBS story on NewsHour. I don't know if you saw it, and I contemplated not clipping it, but it was so odd that this was on PBS NewsHour, and that we're at this level right now in the online game, which is all a game. It's all a game, and it's only going to get more gamified with AI, which is, of course, is pretty decent at creating videos and audio, and, you know, it's great. Okay, so we're going to have all kinds of cool songs we can make on Spotify, and no one will make any money but Spotify. I mean, it's also what's the word I'm looking for? It's just, it all ends up at zero. It just ends up at zero. This is the influencer Vibe lawsuit. Did you hear about this?
No.
Who owns a Vibe? That question is at the heart of a lawsuit where one online influencer is suing another for copyright infringement. 24-year-old Sydney Gifford claims that Alyssa Scheel, a 21-year-old fellow influencer, knowingly replicated her aesthetic and her posts on social media. Amna Nawaz spoke to Sandra E. Garcia of the New York Times, who has been covering this story extensively.
So the idea that you can sue someone over an aesthetic, how does that work? Like, what is the case that's being made in federal court right now?
Well, Sydney Gifford noticed that Alyssa's post started looking a lot like hers a year after their initial hangout. Whether that is the aesthetic, the vibe, the minimalistic style, the clean style, even at some point, some poses and some outfits she details in her lawsuit that she filed. The lawsuit basically says that she got her vibe, her whole look from Sydney Gifford. And Sydney is saying that she has infringed on her profit, right? Because they use their social media accounts to promote their Amazon marketplace, where they can influence people to buy things off of Amazon, and Amazon pays them a commission to do so. And because of that, Sydney has brought this lawsuit in federal court against Alyssa.
So this just amazed me that this was even a news story. The second thing is that there's a lawyer willing to take on an infringement suit against someone's vibe and their and how they present things for Amazon resellers, basically. And even more frightening to me is the is this New York Times journalist, right? That's what works at the New York Times. And so they yes.
First of all, there's a piece of obscurum. Bing Crosby sued and won a number of lawsuits over his voice. Because he had this distinctive crooner's voice, especially in the late 20s and mid-30s, to the mid-30s. And there were copycats. And he sued them all and won.
Would they try to replicate his voice or his style?
Yeah, because it was doable. People could, you know, do a Bing Crosby type.
But they're talking about doing the same pose on Instagram with similar clothes, the minimalist style.
I think it's part of the same thing.
Really? Well, here's part.
I think it's part of the same thing. I mean, I don't like the idea. I mean, if everybody, you know, at the same time, what do you? It's so, like,
hold on.
I don't think this is a bad clip.
So Joe Rogan can then go and sue Sean Ryan and Theo Vaughn and Lex Friedman for copycatting his vibe and his guests.
I don't know that they're copycatting him that much, but if it could be shown that they were, yeah, I think so.
Wow. Well, let's listen to clip two.
And in your reporting, you quote a professor of intellectual property law who explains that in this whole online space, there's an idea that you are both a creator and a borrower. So how hard is it to lay claim to an aesthetic, something intangible like a vibe?
It's such a layered issue. The algorithm, you know, feeds you similar posts, similar creators, similar influencers. If I see a rug and I take a picture on that rug, and it just so happens that another influencer took a picture on the rug a similar way, we could have both reached that last photograph by following a lot of different influencers, celebrities. And so it's hard to say that an aesthetic was reached because of one other influencer, especially when it's such a popular aesthetic, the minimalistic, beige, concrete, neat, clean girl look is very popular right now. And the algorithm is feeding followers and influencers the same kind of posts. And so it's hard to say that this one influencer copied the other, as opposed to the algorithm fed her a million other posts that got her to that end point.
Well, so assuming that, and I appreciate you're taking the other side of this than I am, we're kind of, that this would be that you can copyright or have some type of intellectual property rights to your vibe and aesthetic.
But see, the problem I'm having with this is the use of the term vibe.
Yeah.
If they could come up with something a little more concrete than vibe.
Aesthetic.
I mean, I'm going to, you know, Alexis Brunetti's wife is an intellectual property attorney who handles some of these people and influencers. And I'm going to have her give me a brief on this. So we can at least discuss it more.
It's important to know because, as you'll hear in this final clip, there's a whole economy built around this.
And as you've noted in your reporting, there's an entire economy built around this kind of content creation. So when it comes to this legal case, what's at stake here? What's the potential impact of how this case goes?
It is an unprecedented case, and it could really change the content creator world and the economy because influencers can now be beholden to copyright law, and they would have to be careful how they arrange things. If one person owns an aesthetic, then another person can say they own another aesthetic, and suddenly we're not building on these different vibes and social media looks. We are sort of stifling the content creator world if this case moves forward and it's ruled in favor of Ms. Gifford.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'd like to license my vibe.
There's another aspect to this, which is kind of the irony. And that is that if you're an influencer, quote unquote, you are encouraging people to do this.
Good point. You're hired.
So how can you be? So you're an influencer. So if you're and you have to be self-proclaimed. Otherwise, you can't do the suit to begin with. So you're an influencer, and you think you have some sort of a monopoly on some image or
vibe,
structure
vibe,
or something
it,
you're doing.
Say it, vibe. Say it. It's a thing now. Vibe. Yeah,
the vibe. Okay, you guys. So you're the vibe, but you're an influencer. In other words, you're pushing this vibe. So if somebody follows up and does the vibe that you've been influencing them to do. I mean, how can you sue them?
I mean, what's next? OnlyFans models are going to sue for certain poses? You're stealing my vibe.
Yeah, I got a big breasts. I got big breasts. You can't have big breasts.
Stealing my vibe.
It's my vibe.
Well, we're about to enter.
See, that's the issue here that is that comes right to the fore, which is where you have to draw lines, and that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to come up with some, because I don't think it's a bad idea for the suit. I think it could be seen as frivolous, which I think you might have thought before you started playing these clips, and I got all worked up.
Yes.
But I think the courts are going to have to do something about this.
Well, then I think we need to seriously start thinking about suing some other podcasts. Come on.
Here's the problem that we have. There's zero competition with us. There's nobody even trying to.
We have nobody to sue. We can't license our
stuff. There's nobody to sue. They can't keep up. It was like the closest we'd come was Yo Agenda from some years ago.
Well, no, the Morning Stream did a pretty good job. They did a pretty good job, but they made the fatal mistake of doing it in video so that they could never get their shows together on time. By the time everything was edited, it was out of date. Remember that, the Morning Stream?
Yeah, I don't think that was. I think the closest competition we ever had was Unfiltered.
Unfiltered, yeah. And we could have sued them for taking our vibe, stealing our
vibe.
We
wouldn't have done it.
No, of course not. But I will license
it's because
it.
We're no agenda. We don't think that way. We're not part of that system.
No, we are not. Thank goodness. I just thought it
but
was
But I can understand it. I can fully understand it.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it would be bad for Amazon.
This comes in line with people should go track down the Mark Stein lectures that were done at Hillsdale College.
Oh, man, yeah. I saw that.
Have you heard these things?
Yeah, Tina was playing some of it. This is the against the climate change guy.
Yeah, Mark Stein did. I'm pretty good at understanding some of these libel and slander issues, but I'm not sure. I had to read the case to see what's really going on here. But Mark Stein's been in court for 13 plus years or so, 12 to 14 years. I can't remember the exact number, but years. in the D.C. courts, which are
six, hung up six on, or eight years. It's been going on for a long time.
He made the comment based on the hockey stick, the already debunked, many times debunked hockey stick graph.
Let's just say scientific, climate change. Scientifically disproven instead of debunked.
He said the guy was a fraud.
Mm.
And so, and the guy, the person who put that hockey stick thing together, sued him for slander or libel or something, for some outrageous amount of money, which will be a dollar or two when it's done. But the and it's been in court because of the D.C. court system.
Michael Mann is the guy.
Who's Michael Mann?
Yeah, Michael Mann is the guy who sued him. Michael Mann is the hockey stick guy.
Okay. And so he got his tit in a ringer for just making this comment. And this is very concerning.
Well, how about this? How about value for value? People are using that everywhere. I think we should sue them. And they're, and they're Bitcoiners. So they got Bitcoin. They got some coin. You go after the big guy. Hey, you're using value for value, man. You can't do that. I can hear the gears turning in your head. John's like, exit strategy. Yeah.
I don't think we can do that.
Okay.
You'd have to prove no prior use of the term, which I don't know if you can do.
Probably not.
There's a lot of issues with trying to do that. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it's not our style. I'm not adverse to being litigious, but it's not necessarily as part of this model.
In fact, Ayn Rand might come back from the dead and sue us. We wouldn't want to have that. So I think that's where you got it from.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh.
That would make sense. Oh. Some true ball way.
All right. I got to do some big pharma stuff because I got a dynamite one from Scott Gottlieb. Who doesn't know Scott? Scott Gottlieb is our former FDA commissioner, now on the board at Pfizer. And what's the other place? Intelligentsia. It's.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was just Pfizer.
No, some gene morphing place.
Oh, okay.
So he goes on CNBC and the Sorkin kid, Andrew Ross Sorkin, he touches the third rail, but he does it in such a wishy-washy way. And essentially is saying, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't have these pharma ads on television. I can't believe he broached the topic, but he did. And Scott Gottlieb was ready for him.
And just on a very personal basis, I mean, given your background, your work, obviously.
Notice that personal basis has nothing to do with CNBC. We love pharma ads here.
Heaven forbid I have my. Just wow, that is wishy-washy.
Personal basis here.
And just on a very personal basis, I mean, given your background, your work, obviously, at Pfizer, you have the relation with Pfizer and Illumina.
Illumina. You have the relation. He's on the board.
He's on the board of directors. He's, you know, basically essentially running the company.
You have a relation with them.
Pfizer and Illumina. You could argue that Joe and I have a relationship with the television world and NBC, which collects advertising. Here we are saying, actually, maybe this is not a good idea. What do you actually think? Put the laws and everything else aside. What do you personally think?
Yeah, look, we've looked at this with data over about 20 years at FDA, because this has obviously been a controversial issue. So we have commissioned, or we did when I was there, commissioned multiple studies looking at what the public health impact was of advertising. And by and large, what you found was that...
Hold on a second, stop.
Yeah.
This actually wasn't even the question.
No.
He was beating around the bush. He couldn't bring himself, Sorkin couldn't bring himself to actually ask specifically whether advertising pharma, prescription pharma drugs on TV is a good thing for the public policy at all. He never really asked that. He just kind of beat around the bush. And this is a good, you mentioned this. This guy was ready for it with the, he asked the question himself.
Yes.
He actually stepped in it. He could have avoided this whole topic.
No, he knew what to say.
Is there commissioned multiple studies looking at what the public health impact was
of
advertising? And by and large, what he found was that advertising seen on TV drove people who had symptoms into the doctor's office, prompted them to seek help-seeking behavior, and...
I have help-seeking behavior.
Help-seeking behavior. Yeah, restless leg syndrome. I mean, all the crap that they're advertising to try to get people to buy more drugs drove them into the doctor's office. Maybe these people didn't need to go to the doctor's office. They're hypochondriacs.
Well, he actually had, he was ready for that too, John.
Doctor's office prompted them to seek help-seeking behavior and ultimately got more people diagnosed. And so the net public health impact was a positive one. Now, I know it's difficult for a lot of physicians. Patients come in asking for a particular prescription because of an advertisement that they saw. And if it's not a good recommendation for that individual patient, it takes a lot of time for a physician to counsel them.
It's actually bad for the doctors, you see, because people show up saying I've got restless leg syndrome and anal leakage, and they don't have that, and the doctor has to explain, no, I don't want to sell this to you.
And why not? And doctors are very busy. They don't have a lot of time to have these kinds of conversations. And so I know there are some frustrations among providers, but from purely a public health standpoint, in terms of prompting patients to go in and see physicians when they have certain symptoms that might be consistent with a given condition, it provides a net public health gain. And the advertising is tightly regulated in terms of what companies can say. So those messages have to be crafted towards trying to promote that help-seeking behavior.
Oh, that's why they always say, talk to your doctor. That's promoting help-seeking behavior. Now we have the legal term. We finally know where it comes from.
Ask your doctor if this is right for you.
Yes. Yes. And the answer is always going to be GLP-1, Ozempic, or in this case, Zepbound.
Now to that major medical headline, the new treatment for obstructive sleep apnea.
Major medical headline.
The condition affecting millions of Americans, of course. And joining us to break it all down is ABC News medical correspondent, Dr. Darian Sutton. Good morning to
you. Break it down for us,
Doc. Let's talk about this because we have Zepbound. It was already FDA approved for weight loss. Now FDA approved for sleep apnea. It's pretty surprising, right?
Surprising and social.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I have some help-seeking behavior about my sleep apnea. Can I get some diabetes medicine to fix that? Yeah, of course. It's a headline.
The FDA approved for weight loss. Yep. Now FDA approved for sleep apnea. It's pretty surprising, right?
Surprising, and it's also the first of its kind. There is no medication that exists that has been approved to treat sleep apnea. And just to help everyone understand, sleep apnea is so much more than just heavy snoring. These are periods of time when you're not breathing, without oxygen, and not treated. That increases your risk of diabetes, heart disease,
what?
Dementia.
Wait a minute. What?
If you don't sleep well, that increases your chances of diabetes. I know. It's amazing. I'm not a doctor, but this doesn't sound right to me. I thought you could kind of get away with it the other way. Like if you're obese, then you may have more trouble breathing.
Yeah, you're a big fat guy.
Yeah.
And you're snoring because you can't barely breathe anyway. And, you know, you're laying in bed and you're making a lot of noise. You're probably diabetic already.
Breathing without oxygen and not treated, that increases your risk of diabetes, heart disease, dementia. And it's even been associated
dementia.
To a short...
Yeah, dementia. Hey.
What? Dementia? You get the snoring causes dementia.
I'm going to make a prediction. Write it down. You have your book. Write it down in the book. Write it down.
I have a pen. Go.
Zepbound or Ozempic will eventually be a cure for erectile dysfunction. Write it down in the book. It's coming.
Lifespan. Now, on Friday, FDA has approved Zepbound to treat those with obesity and sleep apnea. In these studies, up to 40% of patients had full resolution of their symptoms and diagnosis, effectively a cure.
Oh, my gosh. So what could this mean for insurance coverage?
Oh, my God.
This is amazing. Oh, my gosh. I didn't expect this.
Oh my gosh. So what could this mean for insurance coverage and Medicare?
This is an ongoing conversation. Here we go. Talk about these injectable weight loss medications, Zepbound, Save Active Ingredient as Manjaro, similar to Ozempic. Insurance companies
it's
often
all
cover
same.
It is for the treatment of diabetes. It's been around for more than 20 years, but not often for weight loss. And so likely cost is a big factor here. More than $1,000 a month, more than 40% of Americans are considered obese. And also when you think about it federally, Medicare, Medicaid, the Biden administration has proposed a proposal to cover the treatment of weight loss, but that
what is wait. Proposed the proposal?
Yeah, I had the same.
How do you propose a proposal, or do you propose a proposal?
And also, when you think about it federally, Medicare, Medicaid, the Biden administration has proposed a proposal to cover the treatment of weight loss, but that decision will be pending on the Trump administration. Cost is still a big factor here. The CMS, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, estimates it can cost up to $30 billion over a 10-year period.
Yeah.
But it's important to note that the CDC cites obesity-related health conditions cost more than $170 billion a year. So there's certainly a healthy argument for discussion here.
Absolutely. Oh, there's a healthy argument.
The argument.
Cost
Thank you so
benefit
much.
Analysis. Bring Kennedy in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the food industry is, I think we talked about on the last show. They're like, oh, Kennedy's coming, man. Let's change the labeling.
Packaged foods in the U.S. must follow new rules in order to call themselves healthy. The Food and Drug Administration finalized its new standards yesterday. Under the rule, a healthy food must contain a certain amount of ingredients from one or more food groups, such as fruit, vegetables, grains, dairy, and protein. There are also limits for added sugars, sodium, and saturated fat. Foods that could previously carry the labels, such as white bread and heavily sweetened cereals and yogurts, no longer qualify. This is the FDA's first major change in 30 years. The new rule will take effect within 2 months.
Oh, just in time. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it has to have healthy ingredients. It has to have some carrots. Got to have some other things in there. This is not going to work if Kennedy gets confirmed, which is, I guess, questionable.
Well, I've said it before, all Trump has to do is threaten an executive order against the drug companies about advertising on television.
Yeah.
And say, we're going to just end it. You're this advertising on television and you know, for prescription drugs on any media other than, you know, medical journals is done.
Yeah.
They'll knuckle under and they'll push Kennedy in. Okay, we'll deal with Kennedy later. We don't need this aggravation.
We'll deal with Kennedy the way we always deal with the Kennedys.
Well, that could be
true. I hope not. Meanwhile, they are coming for your pets. We've been waiting for it, and it's finally here.
How you can keep your pets safe.
So, for one thing, you don't want to feed them either table scraps or any food that's got raw milk products, any kind of dairy products.
Hold on a second. Stop. So, Mimi had this book that she was working on besides the egg book.
Yeah.
And this is a book that's actually done, and I keep thinking we should just put it together and sell it. It was called Making Your Own Dog Food.
Mm. Oh, that's a good
title. And it was based on the thesis, and I think it's a good one, because we've had dogs, long-lived dogs.
Yeah, they eat
two
scraps.
Of us both. I had my Spitz little American Eskimo that I had went for about 16, 17 years before he died. It was a long-lived dog. And I basically only fed that dog scraps.
Yeah, that's what they're bred for. That's what they're meant for.
And dogs were bred to eat human garbage because they were outside the little compounds that humanoids used to live in, these villages, and they had all their garbage outside. They threw it away somewhere, and the dogs would come around and they made friends with us because they got to eat our leftover food. So the idea is that Mimi still makes a pot of leftover crap for the dogs. And so, and the dogs live forever. And so now they're trying to, but they, you know, this is not good for the pet food companies. They like to make kibble and these poor dogs eat this crap.
Hold on.
And they don't live very long.
This is really about bird flu. This whole report is about bird flu. That's why don't give your.
Well, I got that in anyway.
Yeah.
But no, it's good. The point is that this is already bull crap.
Or any food that's got raw milk products.
What was that all about? Why does she think that's so funny? Weird.
Food that's got raw milk products, any kind of dairy products that you might be coming, getting frozen. If you're giving them table scraps and it's poultry, make sure the poultry is very well cooked. You want to keep your pets safe inside. But I'll tell you the bad news, in a lot of cats around the world that have developed the bird flu, a lot of them have been indoor cats. And what they're starting to see is that there could be infected birds that are part of the composition of the cat food.
Now, it's not so much about
what?
Yes, the composition of the cat food.
So they're making cat food out of dead birds? When does this happen? There's a dead crow. Let's throw him in the cat food.
So the other thing you want to do is if you're hiking with a dog, for example, and they're in the wild and they're touching animal feces, they're walking in, you're walking in feces and stuff, keep those shoes out. And if you're in a shelter, make sure you have PPP on if you're handling birds. And, the usual stuff, a lot of COVID, everything that we learned with COVID-19, we should revisit.
The COVID protocols. I think what's so confusing about this one is it's birds, but it's also cows, it's also dairy, and then it's also the food that you buy that might be infected.
That's right. You know
it's there.
It's worse than that. The way this spreads through secretions, it spreads through feces, it spreads through what we call fomite transfer. So if you have the infection on your feet, you get into your car, and then someone else gets in the car, that you're starting to transfer the virus. You're getting splashed.
Holy moly!
If you get in the car, you rub your face on the mat, you could get it.
Raw milk, you're getting...
Break, lady.
This is good.
Machinery. But here's the thing. Birds fly.
Machinery. Hey, Bill, that punch press you got. Wear gloves. Wear a mask.
They've gone insane. They really have. They have nothing left to do.
Oh, my God. Machinery. Oh, yeah.
We just have to psyop everybody every single minute of the day. There's no disaster. We can't scare you. Let's scare you with your cat.
Virus. You're getting splashed with raw milk. You're touching machinery.
Oh, no.
But here's the thing. Birds fly.
How much raw milk is out there? They make it sound as though there's a plague of raw milk. You have to go out of your way to get raw milk. I don't care where you live.
And then she splashed me with raw milk. Oh, no.
Transfer the virus. You're getting splashed with raw milk. You're touching machinery. But here's the thing. Birds fly.
Who's splashing you with raw? Now, there are some women when they're breastfeeding.
Yeah, a squirt.
They like to squirt their men just as a joke.
That's hilarious.
And that's raw milk.
That's right. Don't give me bird flu.
You're going to give me the bird flu.
Okay. So you have migratory birds dropping feces in zoos, zoo animals and endangered species, cats, tigers, things like that are coming down with it. Because this is one of those diseases that can travel the globe very, very quickly. And so while right now human cat to human is...
Here we go.
There's that one case, but we don't know what other comorbidities, they may
have. It always starts with one case, right?
This disease is probably one mutation away from becoming zoonotic.
There it is.
One mutation away. This is the key phrase, one mutation away.
Yep.
Now, where did this crappy report come from?
That was CBS.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, CBS. Well, let's go to Como up in Seattle.
The Como 4 drone shows empty animal enclosures at this wildcat sanctuary in Shelton. The Wild Felid Advocacy Center announced more than half of its big cats as of this month have been infected with bird flu.
It's been one big nightmare, really. Never thought something like this would happen to us. Maybe only in a facility that had cats near each other, and ours are spread out over 5 acres.
The tragedy has deeply affected the sanctuary workers, who are grieving the loss of 20 animals that were part of worldwide wildcat conservation efforts. They include a tiger, cougars, lynxes, bobcats, and other big cats. The viral infection carried by wild birds can spread through bird-to-bird contact and can impact other mammals that eat birds or bird droppings. We're told cats are very vulnerable and symptoms happen fast, often killing the animals within days from conditions like pneumonia.
So, tigers are dying from bird flu?
Well, pneumonia, technically.
Right.
And how's that work?
Because it's birds having sex with birds. They're getting bird flu. They're coming into contact with each other. This whole, I'm very skeptical about these reports. And zoos are on high alert.
Zoos across the country
are skeptical about the fact that they dropped, well, hold on a second there. I'm skeptical about the fact that they dropped a pneumonia bomb in there.
Yeah.
Pneumonia is contagious, you know.
Hmm. Especially the walking pneumonia. Someone got me the song. Because you said that on the last show, Johnny Rivers.
Yeah, Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Flu.
Here we go. I got them. Here we go. The Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Blue. There you go. Beautiful. It exists. Back to the zoos. High alert.
Zoos across the country on high alert. In Phoenix, five zoo animals have died after contracting avian influenza, including a cheetah, a mountain lion, and a kookaburra. Another zoo in Seattle losing a rare red-breasted goose to the virus.
Members across the nation are all taking precautionary measures to make sure their populations are safe and secure.
Experts say this strain of the virus is unusually deadly to mammals.
Okay, so now it's a new strain. It's not just, it's still H5N1, but it's a new strain that's and still H5N1.
Deadly to mammals.
Yeah.
Cats. Even though
it's, yes.
It's called avian flu. The range of mammals that it's infected has just expanded the level of concern, really, because it looks like many more species are potentially infectable.
My kid, my baby. You ready?
At the Los Angeles Zoo, where there have been no cases of bird flu, Chief Veterinarian Dr. Dominique Keller is tracking the virus closely and doing everything she can to protect the animals under her care.
That's really nice.
Animals can get the virus from the droppings of an infected bird or by eating infected poultry or other food. The zoo now implementing safety measures to minimize exposure, including foot baths for shoes.
So that's part of the protocol.
And stricter food protocols. But the greatest risk comes from above.
The hardest thing for zoos to control for is that a lot of enclosures like this one are open, so wild birds can easily fly over or land in them. And if one of those birds is infected, then those animals are exposed.
The USDA has tracked the virus in more than 10,000 wild birds across the U.S.
You're never going to have zero risk. So we accept that, and that's part of being a veterinarian.
Some animals getting additional protection, like the zoo's breeding population of critically endangered California condors, some of the few birds to get a bird flu vaccine.
Whoa.
The zoo has many species of endangered birds, all of whom appreciate the extra care.
So to come back around to what you said originally, yes, the pet food.
The first human case of bird flu in Los Angeles County is prompting a new warning. Pet owners are being told not to give their animals certain raw foods. Bird flu samples were found in certain Northwest Naturals pet food products.
Mm-hmm.
The food was recalled after a pet cat in Portland, Oregon, died after consuming it. A warning last week cautioned against giving cats raw milk.
That book Mimi's doing is going to be banned. Amazon will take it right off. You can't be making your own pet food.
I'm reminded of the a company that Jay used to work for, which was a raw pet food company in Oakland.
Mm.
It had since moved someplace else, but her job was grinding up rabbits.
Nice.
And ducks.
Mm.
And other animals to make this raw food, which was extremely popular, especially with the upper set and places like Piedmont, who'd only feed their cats this stuff.
Yeah.
And it was considered the best, you know, it's just, I'm sure the animals loved eating it too. It must have been delicious to a cat. But this may be part of a scheme to kind of put the clamp, because if you haven't noticed on television, there's at least two companies now, then they have these kind of mocking commercials about the guy who's got some sort of raw food, dog food in his refrigerator. And his friend says, what are you putting dog food in the refrigerator for? And then the guy gets thrown out and the guy's there with his dog and they're feeding the dog this stuff. And so there's been a big movement to making these very high-end dog foods. This could be the kibble industry's plot.
It could be, or...
I'm never surprised by these types of marketing tricks.
It wouldn't surprise me either. Or maybe one of those Haitians who's eating the geese
eating the dogs, they're eating the pets.
Gets bird flu and then starts spreading it amongst the Haitian population. It's coming. Look, Hotep already told us. Hotep done told you. Hotez. He said January 21st.
Peter Hotez.
This is when it's happening. It's all
Austin,
going down.
Austin, Texas.
It's all, no, he's in Dallas. It's all going down, you know?
I like the way you defended Austin there.
Well, too close for comfort. I know. What am I doing? Of course. Austin. Yes. Yeah. People here. Where do you live? Fredericksburg. Where's that? Austin. Oh, Austin. Yeah, that's great. Austin.
Hill country is a good term. Yeah, everyone knows what that means.
Well, yeah.
That's the best part of Texas.
It is.
It's considered, you know, if you talk, hill country. Oh, hill country. There's actually a hill there.
Yeah. We've got a big hill. Yes. All right. What you got? You got anything? Surely you've got something fun here.
Got me relaxed here with these great clips.
I know. I'm doing all the work.
You're on a roll.
Doing all the work.
We could do a couple Ask Adams here. That would be kind of fun.
I think that's a dynamite idea.
I actually have two different ones.
Oh.
The first one, since we were talking about bird flu, this is, you don't play the clip. This is just the answer to the question I'm going to ask you.
All right.
What is the national bird of the United States?
Well, I know the answer to this because we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I would have instinctively said the bald eagle, but that only just recently got signed into law.
You knew the answer to this one.
I knew the answer to this one.
Well, because I was under the impression that the bald eagle was the national bird, but I guess it was never a national bird.
The bald eagle.
We never had a national bird.
The bald eagle is now officially the national bird of the United States. This after President Biden signed some 50 bills into law, including one that amends U.S. code to give the bald eagle that special status. Congress adopted the design of the Great Seal with the bald eagle front and center in 1782, but the bird hadn't been legislatively designated as the national bird. The bill was spearheaded by Minnesota lawmakers, which is fitting since the state has the second highest number of bald eagles after Alaska.
All right, so I have an Ask John as a follow-up ask question. What did Benjamin Franklin suggest to be our national bird before he suggested the bald eagle?
The turkey.
Correct. Well, that was disappointing.
There's turkeys all over the place. It's the reason.
Disappointing you knew that one. All right, let's do the next Ask Adam. All right.
Okay, so here's another one. This is a good one. This is PolitiFact's Lie of the Year.
Uh-huh.
You probably know the answer to this,
no,
too.
I don't know the answer to this.
Clip one introduces the Lie of the Year question.
It's safe to say the 2024 campaign cycle was unlike any in modern American history. The team at the fact-checking organization PolitiFact investigated hundreds of claims made this year by political figures to separate fact from fiction. As Ali Rogan reports, one comment stood out as PolitiFact's 2024 Lie of the Year.
All right, do I play the jingle here? Is this where I get to play the jingle?
You can play a jingle.
Oh, okay.
Ask Adam, will he know or will he won't? I don't know, but here we go. Ask Adam, yeah.
Answer the question, go.
Now,
all right, go. Yeah.
No, wait, if I was going to answer this, if I was trying to psych this question out, I would Lie of the Year. For last year, especially during the election, I would say like blood. Remember the bloodbath? There's going to be a bloodbath. Yes, that's a whopper.
Yep.
No troops in combat zones.
Yeah, that's another good one. Yeah.
Harris said Hitler.
Yeah.
That's a lie of the year. Hitler.
There's a good one. Yeah, that's a good
fascist
one.
Threat mm-hmm. to democracy. Mm-hmm. The end of voting.
Yes. How about the grid? The grid is going down. I would.
Oh,
said
the grid's going. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a great lie of the year.
Yeah.
So, what's your guess?
My guess is Joe Biden is as sharp as a tack.
That would be the top tip. To me, Joe Biden being sharp as a tack is the lie of the year. Yes. And here it is. Here's the lie of the year.
Oh, okay.
They're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. Woo! They're eating
They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
Wow.
And this is what's happening in our country, and it's a shame.
That was the lie of the year? Wow. That's not a lie. They're eating the dogs. Well,
let's listen to their explanation, and I have a commentary to give you about the history of PolitiFact's bullcrap lies of the year.
Those untrue comments set off a firestorm on the campaign trail and had a profound impact on the residents of Springfield, Ohio. Now it's been named Lie of the Year. Katie Sanders is the editor-in-chief of PolitiFact and joins me now. Katie, thank you so much for being here. First of all, is there any kernel of truth to this? And also, how does PolitiFact determine whether something is an outright and deliberate lie versus other types of untruths?
When Trump and Senator J.D. Vance were asked about this lie and they were asked to defend it, as so many officials and journalists were saying there was no evidence to support it, they kept talking about reports they heard from television in Trump's case or from constituents in the Ohio senator's case. And they basically said that is enough for us to make this claim. It's enough of a basis. But people make reports to police and other agencies all the time. And that just prompts an investigation. That doesn't mean that something actually happened. And Trump and Vance were circulating screenshots of allegations and police calls that were about geese, not people's pets, that were later taken back by the people who made them, who told journalists they regretted it. J.D. Vance even acknowledged that these reports he was hearing from his constituents might turn out to be false. But when they did, when they turned out to be empty, he just kept defending the lie anyway, saying he could do that to bring attention to Springfield's immigration experience.
Okay, so let's look at the lies of the year from these guys. They started doing this in 2009. And their first lie, the lies of the year from PolitiFact are always something to do with Republicans.
Oh,
it's
really?
Always a Republican. Always. That's Joe Biden's sharpest attack. This is the best Joe Biden, blah, blah, blah. No. He has to be Republican. The first one in 2009, the first lie of the year from PolitiFact was Sarah Palin's saying death panels.
Oh, right. Oh, goodness. Yes. Got it.
And by the way, death panels became what they are, which is death panels. They still do them.
Yeah, we have them everywhere now. Every European Union country has
them. So then there was just a lull of various weird lies. And then we get, as soon as Trump shows up, 2015, lie of the year, Trump's campaign misstatements. Wait. The lie of the year is a lie, not a bunch of misstatements put into a bag and called lie of the year. Okay, well, that's okay. Let's let that slide. 2016, Trump again for saying the term, using the term fake news.
That's a lie?
That's a lie.
Wow. That should be word term of the year is what it should be.
2017, Trump again. Russian election interference is a made up story. No, it wasn't made up, even though it was made up.
Made up, yeah.
But that's Trump's lie of the year. We can go up to 2019. Trump's claim that whistleblowers got Ukraine call almost completely wrong. What? I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. It was a perfect
call.
It goes
on. I mean, I could just one year after, what, couple more.
Yeah.
Let's go to 2021. Lies about January 6th. You know, it wasn't an insurrection. I tried to have, you know, all this Trump. And we finally switches over to Kennedy in 2023 out of the blue.
Vaccine. Yeah, vax.
Once Kennedy becomes a Republican, they wouldn't. Kennedy's been saying the same stuff for 20 years, but now he's a Republican.
Lie of the
year. We can say Robert Kennedy's campaign of conspiracy theories is the lie of the year. Again, it's not a single thing. It's a bunch of things. So this PolitiFact thing, that the fact that he even got, again, another example of NPR uselessness, this is just a propaganda tool.
That's great. I love that. Anyway, I still think mine was better, sharpest attack, because everybody could get in on that one.
Sharpest attack. That's the best one.
Yes.
That would be the lie of the year. Yes. Well, you should have. That should have been it.
We're so lazy, but we should do stuff like this. I mean, so here we are. Everyone's doing Lie of the Year. They write it in November. Oh, let's do Lie of the Year so we could take off for Christmas. Now, we got bird flu. We're just doing a show for you and pulling this nonsense apart. But we should be doing this stuff. We need to do the award show.
I told you this years ago that we should do the podcast awards and some other award shows.
It's so dumb. They have the podcast Hall of Fame. Oh, Adam, would you please come to Miami in January and be the host, the MC of the podcast Hall of Fame? I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. But how does it even make sense?
Would you do it for $5,000 or $10,000?
No, I wouldn't do it for any grand. No.
You wouldn't do it for any grand?
No, because it makes no sense. The podcast, how many people were involved in early podcasting? This has been going on for 20 years. They've been doing the Hall of Fame. By the way, it's only Americans. There's never any other people in it. It doesn't make any sense. Podcast Hall of Fame. No, then we can get you a ticket to the Podfest. They weren't even going to pay for
the Podfest.
They weren't even going to pay for my flight. But that wasn't the criteria. I'm just like, no, I don't want to do that.
They weren't going to pay for your flight.
No,
they just give you a ticket to the Podfest.
In case you missed it, there's no money in podcasting anymore. It's all dried up. All the advertisers. A lot of it is dried up. Yeah.
It comes and goes. It's a cycle.
Yeah. Oh, it'll come back. It'll always be some new format and some content. You know,
what was the one that was triggered?
Serial, true crime.
Serial. One shot. It was like a one hit wonder.
It was. It came at the perfect moment. Everybody was binging Breaking Bad on Netflix. Like, oh, this is great. I can binge. Remember that? Binge. Binge watching. It was the word of the year, I'm sure. Binge watching. And then all of a sudden, along comes audio only, mystery, true crime. And you couldn't binge listen it. You had to wait until the next episode, the next week. And people liked it. They were standing around at the water cooler talking, oh, what do you think? Did he do it? Is it true? And by the way, this also completely discredits the whole you've got to have video for your podcast to be successful. That's nonsense. Not a single true crime podcast does video. It's all audio. It's the number one category. And women especially, they love it. Morbid creatures that they are. They like true crime. Maybe we should do true crime podcast.
It's too much work.
Anyway, I wanted to play this interview. Well,
before you play that, I do have a shorty, a 9-second clip.
Oh, okay.
Because this is this is PBS, and this is bull crap. This is the clip that is Chris Maka.
Oh, Chris Maka.
And for the first time in almost 20 years, Christmas and the first night of Hanukkah fall on the same day. Some have given it the nickname Chris Maka.
No, they haven't. I've never heard anybody say this.
Didn't Adam Sandler do that in a song?
Maybe. I mean, that's possible, but nobody says Chris Maka. Nobody.
Let me see this. It has a Wikipedia entry.
This is PBS giving us this bull crap.
No, it has a Wikipedia entry.
Yeah.
Let me see. When did it start? Chris Maka. By the way, because someone sent us an email about it, I looked up the Form 990 for Wikimedia, the people behind Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah. People are all adamant about what's going on there with their DEI stuff.
Do you know how much money they raked in 2023?
Oh, tens of millions.
Try again.
Hundreds of millions.
$245 million.
Yeah, and most of it goes to hating Whitey, apparently.
Yeah, this is a slush fund. This is a hate. They are a hate group. It's a slush fund.
Yeah, it's a hate group.
It's a slush fund for other stuff, and they send it all over the world.
Yeah, it's not. They don't even use it for their own servers. They say, like, you know, this reminds me of the collapse of certain podcasts. They ask for money, value for our value for value money goes to the podcast. It pays the bills. We don't take a chunk of money that people donate to us and then give it to somebody else. We don't do that.
No. God, no.
It's like, if you want to give it to them, go give it to them. Why you? What would you give it to us to give it to them?
Yeah, that's not right.
No. And so this happened with the Adam Carolla when he was asking for money for something.
Oh,
and
that was the podcast patent suit.
Yeah, the podcast patent suit.
Yeah.
So podcasters were collecting money for their podcast and then giving it to him?
Yeah.
Well, this is what Wikipedia is doing. Why are they taking this money instead of just building up their site, making things better?
Well, trust
instead me. Instead of they're just giving it to other...
Trust me. This is not coming from people sending in their $35 to Wikipedia. This is intelligence money. Wikipedia can't be trusted. This is the primary.
They can't.
This is the primary ingest method for anyone fact checking or any AI that is slurping up the internet. No, this is an intelligence operation. $245 million. I think not. I mean, seriously.
Well, there's definitely Intel money involved.
With that, I'd like to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in Chrismica. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. Dvorak.
Yeah, well, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also, in the morning, all ships of sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to the trolls in the troll room. Let's help them. Oh, we're down. Trolls down. 1726.
Wow, I was predicting 1600.
I thought it would be around 1500, honestly. But I'm surprised. And you know what? These trolls who are here, we appreciate every single one. There's still a lot of trolls listening. That's amazing. It's amazing anybody listens to us. You think about it.
Well, there is that aspect.
It's amazing anybody listens to us.
We're so damned entertaining.
Well, we do keep getting emails with people saying, you know, I just feel good after listening to your show.
But I hope so.
I get the news and you make me laugh about it. Yeah, that's what we do. We're a comedy show. Look us up under the comedy heading on Apple Podcasts. So these trolls are at trollroom.io. That's where they you can listen in. You can join the troll room from there, or you can get a modern podcast app. Please, it's podcastapps.com. And there you can find... you know, Podverse, Fountain, CurioCaster, Castomatic, Podcast Guru, a whole bunch of them, all with modern features, including those wonderful chapters that Dreb Scott does for us. He does that with the artwork that we get from our artists, which I'll just go straight to that because we have no agenda, artgenerator.com, part of our value for value. Don't steal it. We're going to sue you for our vibe. Our value for value proposition, which is we work for you. We provide this as a service. We believe it's a valuable service. We just ask you to send something back in return. People do all kinds of things for us. We love it when you send us money so we can pay the bills, as John just discussed. But we also take time and talent, as treasure being the third one. And the artists, which now seem to be pretty much prompt jockeys, but they're out there. it's what it is, I guess, for now. I mean, eventually we'll get back to real art. Real art will never go away.
I doubt it.
Yeah. What, you think it's going to be AI for the rest of our lives? For less of our breathing?
When it first started off, when it was like 90% real art and 10% AI, it just flipped. It'll be 90% AI and 10% real art. You're right. It won't completely disappear.
It's kind of sad to think about it. Well, they upload to noagendaartgenerator.com, which is still a very valuable service. Sir Paul Couture put that together for us years and years and years and years ago, and we still use it twice a week. And this is where any artist and even prompt jockeys can upload their art, and we gladly use that as the album art for our show. We use it for promoting the program. It looks good in the podcast apps, and we always like to thank the artist who brought that for us. And I think this was a new artist, Susanna Leah, did the artwork. We're always looking for something traditional, which Susanna Leah understood very well. She gave us a Merry Christmas, no agenda, tree in the background. Looked like the balloons and candies, I guess. There were a number of different Christmas pieces. Of course, John immediately says, I like the cheesecake. Yeah, the cheesecake one is really good. But no. And then you wanted Just the Tip by Francisco Scaramanga, which you thought it was cute. The girl is biting the snowman's carrot nose. Yeah, okay, John. Like, we didn't know what that was.
She's
all about.
Kissing it.
Yeah. Okay.
And by the way, I should mention that I did use that for the newsletter. It's a very, for Scaramanga, because Scaramanga normally does stuff that has got more dimensionality. It's not cartoony like this piece is. I just thought this piece was extremely well executed by the AI, whatever he's doing there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we knew exactly what was being insinuated there, and I'd nix that. I'll have none of that.
Well, I used it anyway.
Yeah, well, you can use it on your newsletter. That's fine.
You nixed it because you're a prude. You saw into it things that didn't exist. It was existed. A carrot.
It existed. It was unnecessary. Let's see. We had a couple Grinches. We had Santa sleighs. We had, what else did we have here? I mean, it was nice. There were other Merry Christmas bits, but a lot of them from Scaramanga with bits and boobs a lot. And Darren O'Neill. Yeah. It's like,
Darren's and Scaramanga's, those two girls in the Santa outfits with the legs.
Yeah.
It looks like they're using the same software.
Oh,
those two pieces, Merry Christmas by O'Neill and Cheesecake for whatever. There's this basically the same piece.
Yeah. But it's like, we're already two old white guys. I mean, do we really have to ham it up like that?
Those guys are like the deteriorating in their in their lasciviousness.
Yeah, let's put it that way. Lasciviousness. There you go. Yeah, we were in the hotel room, and Christina and Kevin, her fiance, were coming by to celebrate Christmas dinner with us. And so I tried to find on YouTube. I was like, oh, how about just some nice, like I want the Yule log, only want a Christmas scene. And YouTube is filled with videos that are Christmas scenes, but it's all AI. And you got people jerking around, and it's like, it's so obviously AI. You can't even get a normal like Christmas scene. Like, you used to be able to just get to Rockefeller Plaza. You could see people skating on Rockefeller Plaza. You can't get that anymore. No, it's all AI slop. But I feel like culture is going down the drain. I really do.
Wow.
Yeah. What can I say?
A couple of weeks in Europe, and next thing you know, you've turned into an old fogey.
I know. I got to get back to Texas quick, where things are positive.
Texas, where the conspiracies are thriving.
Back to the Hill Country. Thank you all very much, artists. We appreciate you very much for doing this. It's always fun for us after we've done a show to sit down and look at the art and laugh. We do laugh. We laugh a lot of stuff that's just inappropriate. It's really for us. It's humor for us after the show. So it's great. And we love having good art to use for our show, to promote it. It really does help. Of course, we always want to thank everybody who supports the show financially. We mention everybody with their name and their amount over $50. We take time out here to thank our executive and associate executive producers who have supported us with $200 or above. That's your associate executive producer credit. It's a real credit. Use it wherever credits are accepted and acknowledged, including imdb.com. And we'll read your note. $300 and above, you become an executive producer of the No Agenda Show for this episode. And we'll read your note as well, and you get that executive producer title. So we started off today with 421.1, interesting number, from Brad Bruce, Kansas City, Kansas. And right away, a switcheroo. Merry Christmas, Adam and John. This donation is on behalf of my smoking hot wife, Katrina. We found you guys 4 years ago and haven't missed a show since. Thanks for what you do. May God bless you both and the whole No Agenda Nation. Jesus knows and loves you all. Oh, thank you, Brad. And I will put that switcheroo. Let me make sure I get that. It's for, so I guess it's going to be Katrina Bruce. I'm just presuming.
Well, while you're doing that, I'll go on with Charles Mayfield, who's in Neota.
Oh, we know Charles. Neota. He's from Pharaoh.life. He's the Pharaoh guy.
Yeah, Pharaoh. Came at $414.97. ITM gents, value for value for value. 10% back to the big guys for No Agenda Nation's Pharaoh support. Code No Agenda saves 17.76 on all Pharaoh products. FARROW. Our road to knighthood has begun. Other products such other products suck due to climate change.
Does he want that jingle?
Can you give us a link or something here?
It's Pharaoh.life. Pharaoh.life. I know his website. All the women in the Hill Country use it.
Due to climate change.
Pharaoh.life. Yeah, it's basically lard.
Lard. Oh, right. Right. Yeah, you sent me some.
Yeah, it's because the women like it and their pets even more.
Yeah.
Matthew Ross, Indian Trail, North Carolina, $350.58. Just mention the website clipofthedaycom and Instagram ID clip of the day Insta. I'm a closet headbanger tracking my vocal progress and getting back in shape. You got it, Matthew. He did a very nice video I saw on Instagram about how we help him through his day. He's a nice guy. Oh. Yeah, clipofthedaycom.
Commodore Dalton S. Fisher in El Mirage, Arizona, 34567. Good number, 34567. Switcheroo incoming in the morning. And Merry Christmas. It is I, Commodore Dalton S. Fisher. However, please do not credit this donation to me. Instead, I'm giving this executive producership to my dad, Scott the Boomer. Scott the Boomer. During this blessed season and his first Christmas as a Christian, oh, that's interesting, a Boomer Christian, I can think of no better gift than a good thorough de-douching for dear old dad.
You've been de-douched.
I love you, Dad. Merry Christmas for jingles. All we need is they're eating the dogs. And if anyone in Gitmo Nation needs video or social media content for their blue-collar business anywhere in the USA, go to FisherMultimedia.com. That's FisherMultimedia.com. Or email Dalton at FisherMultimedia.com. God bless us, everyone, and thanks for the tax write-off.
They're eating the dogs.
You got it. Boomer Dad. Scott the Boomer. Megan Klein is in Santa Barbara, California, 343.75. ITM John and Adam. I've been a douchebag since 2018 when my friend hit me in the mouth. This holiday season got me feeling like I need to acknowledge all the value you provide, so please accept this very overdue donation. Thanks for all you do from Mac. And Megan A. Klein, I guess. And even though she didn't ask for it, I'm going to give her a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
That's how it works. I mean, you can donate $5 if you want, once, every week, every show. You can donate whatever you do. But eventually, everyone comes around and says, you know, it's time. And there it is. Megan did it. It's time for Megan Klein. Thank you.
J.D. Elkhorn, Nebraska, 333.33. Horowitz and I were reviewing year-end performance when he suggested it's a great time to invest in the best podcast in the universe. The ROI will be immeasurable. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. JD in Elkhorn, Nebraska. No jingles, no karma.
How about that? So, that's nice. Is Horowitz promoting us in that way?
No, Horowitz loves promoting everything. He's a good promoter. He's a log roller of the best sort.
Sir Yogi, Knight of the Carnival Midways, is next with 333.33. And he says, hey, John. Okay. The note below and donation are for Thursday, December 26th, which is my wife's birthday. The donation is to be credited to her. Okay, so that is a switcheroo, he says, for my smoking hot wife, Damie Janice of the Bombing Range. She turns the big 66 today, and I wish her a happy birthday and thank her for putting up with this crazy bastard all these years. Here's another great year. Please know I love nothing more than you. Please give her a biscuit for her birthday.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
And some goat karma, which is her favorite. Keep up the good work, gentlemen, and peace to you both. Sincerely, Sir Yogi, Knight of the Carnival Midways. And here's your service, goats.
You've got karma.
Eli the Coffee Guy in Bensonville, Illinois, 212-26. First Associate Executive Producer. Happy Boxing Day. As we approach the end of 2024, most shows are mailing it in with retrospectives and reruns and substitute hosts, I might add.
Yeah.
I just want to thank Adam and John for bringing fresh quality material as always. Huzzah. For all those who helped make this the best podcast in the universe, from Darren O'Neill to the Clip Custodian, on all those and all those who donate time, talent, and treasure. Don't forget, if you need good coffee, visit GigawattCoffeeRoasters.com and use code ITM for 20% off your order. Stay caffeinated. Eli, the coffee guy.
Yes, I did want to mention, I want to thank Neil Jones, the Clip Custodian, of course, his brother, Steve Jones, who is the Clip Collector, and Dave Ackerman, who is, all three of them helped me immensely during my trip, making sure that I stayed up to date on the latest happenings in U.S. news. Is very much appreciated. Blaine Murphy, Houston, Texas. Merry Christmas, fellas. Here's some value for the weekly infotainment you provide in this crazy world. This donation is also in memory of my dad, Lonnie, who we lost this year. Do you have an F heart disease jingle by any chance? I looked. We don't really. So I never hit him in the mouth, but I think he would have really liked the show, especially John. He was laid to rest in the Texas Hill Country, his favorite place to be. No jingles necessary, just hoping everyone in Gitmo Nation had a peaceful and joyous Christmas. Rejoice! God is with us. Blaine Murphy in Houston. Yes, he is. I'm going to give your dad a karma, though, even though we don't have an F heart cancer.
You've got karma.
There we go.
Justin Baker, nearby Norman, Oklahoma, $210.60, and he has a simple note that simply says, Merry Christmas.
Bingo. Sir Ladyboy in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, switcheroo for my dear friend Martin McIntyre. He consistently hit me in the mouth until I submitted in late 2019 because I realized NPR is full of crap. COVID happened and I was hooked. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, boys. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Oh, by the way, Steve is a douchebag. Jingle, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, they're eating the people's pets. Timothy Wilkinson, you got it.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in, they're eating the cats, they're eating the pets of the people that live there.
I love that everyone in Europe knows this. They all love it. It's so good.
Well, when we first heard it, you had to fall in love with it because the debate was not going that well, and she was snickering and sniggering, and she's looking at him, and she's making faces, and she's got her hand to her face, and she's doing a great job of scene stealing during the debate. Got the big smile on her face, yep, and everything.
Yep.
And he's just looking for something to say to get some attention to himself, and he drops this bomb out of the blue.
And it just goes to show that in this day and age, that's what works. But not, there's no one out there talking about the coconut tree. You know, there's no memes. And actually, I would say that the way this got around the most is there were one or two possibly YouTube videos where guys had sampled this. They're eating the dogs, and I did whole songs about it. Everyone saw those songs.
So yeah,
it was something to behold.
And it still works. It still always gets a laugh.
It always does.
Linda Lupatkin, meanwhile, is looking for some jobs karma. She's in Lakewood, Colorado, $200, and she says, put your best foot forward for 2025. With a resume that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. That's Imagemakers Inc. with a K. And work with Linda Lou, Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You've got karma.
And we are down to our final associate executive producer, Ed Leboutier, Tucson, Arizona. In the morning, he says, kudos to Dame Beth for her meetup in Tucson. Thanks to you guys for all the great media deconstruction. And that's it. That's it. Is this, David, was that 17? It's Australian dollary dues. Do you think that was
178.91 has to be. I'll read it.
Yeah.
David People in Narara, New South Wales, 178.91, which has got to be over 200. I'll do the calculation, but we'll bump him up.
Must be.
Merry Christmas to John and Adam from the Hunter Valley, Australia. Thanks for all you guys do. Love to you and your families. Never have an exit strategy. Thank you, David.
Yeah, and thank you to all of our executive and associate executive producers. And we will be thanking those of you who came in $50 and above. And of course, we always appreciate the sustaining donations, which you can set up yourself at noagendadonations.com. Noagendadonations.com. Again, those credits that the execs and associate execs have, they're good for life, and you can put them anywhere, including your IMDb. Thanks for producing 1724.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. They're eating the dogs.
Shut up, Steve.
Never gets old. Just never gets old. Never gets old. Let me see. There were a couple other things that we needed to talk about.
Let's get these China clips out of the way.
You got some China clips. All right. I like China
Yeah,
clips.
I have a couple. China minerals.
China's dominance over the supply of critical minerals in the spotlight today. The Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party details their findings and proposed solutions. NTD's Melina Weisskopf was at that meeting on Capitol Hill. She brings us the latest.
And they listed their findings after investigating the ways in which the U.S. is dependent on the Chinese Communist Party for critical minerals. Why is this important? Because those critical minerals are used to produce key elements such as semiconductors, anything from basic consumer goods all the way up to advanced military technology. So it's a real problem, the fact that the Chinese Communist Party has dominance over those minerals. So what the lawmakers did is they tried to find ways in the U.S. that we can streamline the production and processing here, mine for those minerals, and try to loosen up some of that dominance that the Chinese Communist Party has over them. They're also today introducing three pieces of bipartisan legislation, that is Republicans and Democrats coming together to try to find solutions in this area to help us be more independent in the critical minerals arena. I spoke to the chairman, John Molinar, about their efforts here. Why is it crucial to address this issue? Here's what he told me, as well as one of the Democrats that's also on this committee. Listen.
What do you think is the most crucial step that will have the most beneficial outcome?
You know, I think the area of allowing the Department of Interior, the Secretary, to do an analysis of what friendly nations we can work with, who already are mining, who already are processing, and identifying how we can immediately lessen our dependence. To me, that's a very good first step. And then we need to build a stronger infrastructure of doing things here.
Okay.
This morning, by the way, there was a report they're going after Apple, the Republic of Congo, or the Democratic Republic of Congo, or the Congo.
For slave labor, children.
Well, it seems as if the Rwandans are going into the Congo and stealing minerals, which are then used in the Apple iPhone, even though this is a stretch. Mm. It's China. They don't even mention China. Because China is the one that makes the Apple iPhone. They're not making it here in Milpitas.
Well, it's assembled. It's assembled in the USA.
But they're not using the minerals here. No. The minerals aren't going here.
No.
So there's something sketchy about this. They're just trying to gouge the Apple. I think they're just putting it.
Well, Apple is on deck to be gouged. Apple is.
Think?
Yeah, I think.
Well, they've been gouging their customers for years, so there you have that.
Yeah, but they're on deck to be usurped by someone. Somehow, something's going to happen. They have not had, I'm going to use the phrase, a moonshot since Steve Jobs died. You know, that's the stupid Apple Vision Pro, which I like the idea of spatial computing, but no. They don't really have anything. It's just
because they're Apple intelligence. They can make emojis, man.
I tell you, every single one of the millennials. So these are all between 25 and 28 years old at the Christmas shindig. They love my flip phone. They're all like, this is cool. I want this. They all wanted that flip phone. And
wow.
I'm not sure why exactly.
Did you ask?
Yeah, I said, why exactly? And I said, well, it's different. And everybody, they all, I will say, they all have set limits on, they've removed TikTok. They've all removed TikTok. It's like, no, I had to get stuff done. I had to remove TikTok. I was addicted to TikTok. They say that hands down. And so you can put limits. I don't know if it's on Android, but you can on the Apple iPhone. You can put a 2 hours per day limit. And then after the 2 hours up, you can't use
it. 2 hours of TikTok?
No, Instagram.
Oh, even worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now play part two of this clips.
Now, there are several issues at hand here, but one of the main issues that we heard from all of the lawmakers is the issue of processing. So in a sense, what happens is that when we do have those minerals, we send them to China for the processing and then buy them back. So we're essentially losing money to be able to have that processing done in China and at the same time giving the Chinese Communist Party more control over those critical minerals. Now, the chairman also listed how dependent we are. So I'll just give you a couple of examples here. So the Chinese Communist Party processes 95% of the world's manganese, 73% of its cobalt, 70% of the graphite, and 3% of global nickel. So you can see how much of a hand the Chinese Communist Party really has over those key minerals. One congressman that I spoke to had very interesting ideas. He gave an example of lithium and the innovation that could be used in order to make lithium obsolete, in a sense, so that we could change the game, change the way things are working, so that all of the money and research that the Chinese Communist Party has put into those minerals could be pointless, and then we could really have the upper hand. Listen to what this congressman had to say.
Maybe lithium becomes obsolete. It's not needed because there's a new material that can actually do it better than lithium. And then what you've done is you've changed the paradigm. Right? So they stifle it here where we do it much cleaner. And so what happens? The capacity is shipped overseas to China where they don't really care about the environment. I mean, all you got to do is go to China. I was there about 7 years ago. I didn't see the sun for 10 days. Why? Because all the pollution.
Oh, brother. Yeah, you know, they can get rid of the lithium and use something different.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
What are you going to use? They finally, I think they're trying to pass bills now to outlaw, you know, unapproved or non-certified lithium ion batteries, particularly ones used in e-bikes, etc.
No,
because, you know, New York is like this stuff is burning down buildings.
Yeah, well, these things are dangerous.
How about
climate change agenda, they're bringing it on themselves.
How about this? Pedal. It's a concept. Pedal.
What?
Pedal.
Actually, pedal a bike?
Pedal your bike. Yes, I'm launching this new meme. Pedal your bike. You don't need an e-bike. Just pedal. It's good for you. You'll be healthy. You get your exercise.
You know, with gear, there's a process. It's a mechanical process called gears.
Oh, yes. You can actually pedal fast.
You can pedal faster and faster and faster with the same basic effort.
But who?
Because of gears.
But who are we kidding, John? These are the coffee badgers.
Coffee badgers?
Badgers.
Coffee badgers?
Yes, it's a concept called coffee badging. Yeah,
I never heard this.
Neither had I, but here's a CNBC report on the topic.
Meet Mr. A. Every morning, Mr. A strolls into the office at 9 a.m., swiping his badge with perfect enthusiasm. He hits a few meetings, grabs coffee with colleagues, and keeps the daily buzz going. But here's the twist. Come noon, he sneaks out, heading home to wrap up his work in comfort. By around 5, he's clocked out. Mission accomplished. Mr. A has redefined the 9-to-5 in his own terms. And interestingly, this trend also has a name.
A new trend emerging in the back-to-office push, and that is coffee badging.
Badging is two worlds colliding. It's employers wanting to get their workers back into the office and employees desire to really have more flexibility on the job. And so that's coming together in this trend of coffee badging.
Coffee badging is happening because workers are using this as a soft revolt against their return to office mandates that companies have put out. And they just like badge in, have a coffee, check in with their colleagues, do some work, and then leave their office early.
There it is, coffee badging.
Why is it called coffee badging?
Because you use your badge to check in. Because, you know, we don't know this anymore.
Oh, yeah. Well, but what's the guy? Wait. I have a cup of coffee.
But no,
I guess you have to have a cup of coffee, don't you? I mean, it sounds like it.
No, you're misunderstanding. The process is you sign in with your badge. Every office, we don't know this anymore because we don't have an office. You walk into the office.
I know the process. You have a little badge.
Yeah, everyone's checked.
And the cool kids have a badge on a kind of a spring thing. You pull it out of a thing and then you let it go and it snaps back.
Snaps back, yes. Okay. So you're now registered, because everything these days is registered. And, you know, that's why they have the mouse movers and all this
stuff. Yeah, this is the... Now, I'm not exactly sure, but I guess it's somehow different than having a punch clock.
It's the same thing. Yes. You get on your Bakelite phone and you send some memos from your typewriter. But yes. And then so you go in, you do a meet. You check in with them. Hey, good morning. GM, how you doing, everybody? Pura Vida. Okay, how's it going? And you do a meeting, and then at noon, you triple out, and you go home, and you sit on your laptop, or you have your mouse mover working. That we have no productivity. Or we have too much middle management that doesn't need to be here. And that's probably the real problem.
Well, that's the real deal. But what's got to do with coffee?
Well, because you go in, and you say hi to everybody around the coffee machine. That's so everyone sees your face. So it looks like, you know, I saw him this morning. Yeah, he's around. He's probably in his... Oh, I see his mouse is moving. He's in the office.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have another... There's a phrase that I heard over the over dinner, and I want you to tell me if you know this phrase. What is it when a person dips?
When a person dips?
Yeah. Yeah. This I'm told by Jay and Brennan. Oh, everybody knows this term.
I have to say I am not familiar with the term.
I didn't know it either. Oh, I've never heard it.
Is it dipping tobacco?
That would be what it should mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it means leave.
Leave. That's dipping. You dip.
Yeah, they were talking about, JC and Jessica are going to come over, then they're going to dip. That's what she said. She says this, and of course, anybody that says stuff like this at my table, they get a grilling. I'm not that old.
Dip.
So I bring it up. What is this supposed to mean? What is this? And you're going to start using this kind of street argot.
Yes.
At the table.
Well, if
you're going to end up being grilled about it.
Yes. And
what kind of gang member are you getting this from?
Well, what you should tell them is, if you do that, you're a dipshit. There you go.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a dipshit gag that was involved in the whole thing. But
well, you know who's not dipping? Is these poor astronauts who are still on the space station.
More than 6 months after starting what was supposed to be an 8-day mission to the International Space Station, astronauts Sunita Williams and her space station family are now preparing to spend the holidays right there in space.
Welcome to the International Space Station as we get ready for the Christmas holidays. It's a great time of year up here. We get to spend it with all of our family up on the International Space Station. There's 7 of us up here. And so we're going to get to enjoy company together.
Williams and fellow astronaut Butch Wilmore were left stuck aboard the ISS back in June after a leak in their Boeing spacecraft made their return trip impossible. A SpaceX resupply mission gave them gifts and fresh ingredients to make special meals just for the holidays. The pair were supposed to come home back in February, but a delay in launching their replacements means they'll actually have to wait until March or April to come back to Earth.
Something is wrong here.
I agree, but I tell you, the overtime must be unbelievable.
Elon, you know, had the opportunity to be the hero, to shine all over Boeing, to send up a Starship and bring them back home safely. Instead, he sends up hats and a Christmas tree and a canned ham. You know, I'm thinking there's an issue with the docking, or that there's been so many. Maybe this thing is a dud. Maybe they can't dock anymore. I have a bad feeling about this. It doesn't make sense.
And Elon should have brought him back in February. It should have been done deal.
That would have been perfect.
Yeah, now they put it off another month or two.
No, more than that. March or April.
That's three months or two, or three.
Okay, on Elon, just for a moment, we're still the M5M is still trying to break up the bromance between Elon and President Trump, and Jen Psaki, who was clearly drunk in this clip, is adding her part.
So now, of course, there's lots of speculation about when.
Tell me that's not drunk.
Wow. She sounds plastered.
So now, of course, there's lots of speculation about when this relationship might implode. As has happened so many times over the years with Trump's generals and his best people, it all feels kind of inevitable, right? I mean, the thing is, this is not going to be the same, though, as Trump casting aside a Scaramucci or a Rex Tillerson. Because Elon Musk is the richest man in the world. He owns a social media megaphone, a platform where he has over 200 million followers. And we just saw the power he wields over the Republican Party. He also has billions of dollars in government contracts. I mean, we're relying on SpaceX rockets to get American astronauts to space and back. This is not an easy relationship to untangle. That's my point. So yes, I mean, this breakup could happen. But if it does, and it may take longer than we suspect, I do think if it does, it's going to be very, very messy.
Wow, that's an in-depth report that brought nothing to the party or the table.
Well,
it's
a lead-in to, well, by the way, wasn't Elon Musk going to buy MSNBC? You dopes.
Well, that was a lark.
Yes.
Somebody put out there and then someone amplified it.
But it
got everyone all freaked out.
I will say it's getting to Trump just a little bit, just a tiny, tiny bit.
As you saw, the president-elect acknowledged the line that Democrats have really seemed to latch onto during the budget negotiations. President Musk, take a listen to one response the president had, president-elect had.
Russia, 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 Ukraine, 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 all the different hoaxes. And the new one is, President Trump has ceded the presidency to Elon Musk. No, that's not happening. But Elon's done an amazing job. Isn't it nice to have smart people that we can rely on? Right?
I think it's getting to him just a little bit.
Well, they know how to
needle
prod him, and they've been doing it, and they don't do it just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They all team up. Yeah. And I think he knows what's going on, but he's it does bother. I think it bothers him. Of course it does.
But it has been fantastic because Elon takes all the arrows and he just sits in Mar-a-Lago.
I think Elon is a guy that is the perfect foil.
Fantastic foil.
He can put up with it. He's Asperger's, plus yeah. one, and he's like, I didn't seem to care. He's more impervious to complaints than Trump is.
Speaking of Asperger's plus. This was a very interesting interview with our Pennsylvania friend, Senator John Fetterman, which I think, what was this on? Was this, I think it was ABC. And I don't even know if he knows what he was saying, because they cut this, because his speech is better, he just goes off the rails. He does the weave, but never comes back. And they edited this. There must have been, I stopped counting after 10 edits in this one piece. And he's like, I'm kind of, we got to stop this nonsense. He's pro Trump.
He is. That's funny.
Really interesting.
I'm just a regular Democrat. I'm not leaving my party, but I'm not sure why some of the things that I've chosen to do, like meeting with nominees and having views that might be more aligned with some of the Republican side, I think that's part of politics. Like, I've been warning people, like, you got to chill out, like the constant, freak out. It's not helpful. So, pack a lunch, pace yourself. He hasn't even taken office yet, because I'm not rooting against him. If you're rooting against the president, you are rooting against the nation. And I'm not ever going to be where I want a president to fail. So country first. I know it's become maybe like a cliche, but it happens to be truth. You have a singular political talent. It's undeniable. Trump, he had the energy and almost a sense of fearlessness to just say all those kinds of things. And people, it's undeniable that it has an entertaining aspect for that too. I never believed that it was about fascism.
And for me, that made it difficult. For
Kamala Harris said that he was a fascist.
Yeah, well, it's like that's her prerogative. I mean, but it's not a word that I would use, because you put a lot of Democrats, especially in my state, that I know and I happen to love people that are going to vote for Trump, and they are not fascists. And also fascism, that's not a word that regular people, you know, use. That, you know, I think people are going to decide who is the candidate that's going to protect and project, you know, my version of the American way of life. And that's what happened.
Unbelievable.
I'm glad you got that clip.
He's an okay guy. He's an okay guy.
The one point he makes in there, which I didn't consider at the time, but it should have been considered, which is he's right about the word fascist. Nobody knows what that means.
Yeah, they think they do.
Yeah. You know, it's a term from World War II. And before, I mean, it became a thing in the 20s, and then it became a movement, fascisti, out of Italy, actually.
Yeah.
And then it became a party, and then it became part of the Nazi ethos, let's say. And then it disappeared from use, and it hasn't been used since in any real sense ever since. And so what 20-year-old or 30-year-old even knows what it means or cares?
Well, I'll tell
you. But the Democrats are pounding it out. Oh, fascism, lie of the year, it should have been, but no.
Yeah.
He's very common sense ish.
Yeah. And by the way, the Italian guys 40 and over, they understand what fascism is, because they say, hey, the European Union, Brussels, fascist. And they're right. That's the definition of fascism right there.
Yeah. Well, Italy's really, you know, was the foundation of fascism. Yeah. And so they invented it in their culture and in their history.
They invented it. They know what it's about.
They invented it. They did.
They're good at it.
It was and by the way, it was an academic movement out of the universities.
You know, we went to a winery while we were in Florence. We went to the Castile de Verrazzano.
Yeah.
And I did not know that the Verrazzano guy who has the castle there, where they still do Chianti wine, that he's the guy that discovered the Hudson Bay, and that's the Verrazzano Narrows Bridge is named after him.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Why would you?
And you know how we ended up?
Dead.
Yes. Do you know how he ended dead?
No, I don't know how he ended dead.
Well, he went on to discover the Bahamas, and then there were cannibals, and they ate him.
Well, that's where Joe Biden got that story.
They tell you that on the tour.
They have Bahamians.
They had cannibalism
going on, and they ate this guy.
That's the story.
They're looking for an Italian meal. Was that the deal?
Yes. Pasta. Here we go. Get this Verrazzano guy. So while they're while Fetterman is all lovey-dovey with Trump, the Congress, the House, decided to screw Gates, who's been doing some screwing of his own.
A new House ethics report is out accusing former Congressman Matt Gates of violating state laws regarding prostitution, statutory rape, and drug use. The 37-page report finds that Gates paid women for sex or drugs on at least 20 occasions and includes text message screenshots where Gates asked women to bring, quote, a full complement of party favors. Hotel. The committee says that this was a code word for ecstasy or other drugs. Another exchange shared by the committee, an unnamed woman and Gates seem to be arguing over pay when she asks Gates, quote, so I'm not to be taken care of for last week? Gates responds saying, quote, I gave you $250 today, and about last week, says, quote, you gave me a drive-by. Now, Gates is striking back at the report on his ex account, posting or reposting about it more than 30 times since its release, writing in part, quote, they did this to me in a Christmas Eve report and not in a courtroom of any kind where I could present evidence and challenge witnesses. Trump, meantime, continues to stand by Gates. Late last night, Gates posting this picture with the caption, I got a great note from President Trump. The note is written on a printed headline of the story and reads, Matt, very unfair.
So it was like $100,000 for 10 escorts.
Yes, there was that is kind of distressing.
$8,000?
There's other $100,000, yeah. There's other aspects of the story that should be noted.
Yeah.
And there's three of them. First off, the woman who accused Gates, who said she was 17 and accused accused Gates. According to one news report, and the reporter seems to be a real guy who used to work for Associated Press, claims she's actually in jail for pulling the stunt of sexual accusations.
Oh, interesting.
And she's in the slammer.
Oh, okay.
And so there's that one thing. The second thing is that a lot of this is set up so Gates can sue Congress over the release of this information.
Interesting.
Because they're not supposed to do that. So there's a lawsuit that's possible, and if this woman's in prison, I think that could go through. And the third thing is Marjorie Taylor Greene has come out, and I think reasonably so, and says if we're going to start releasing this sort of thing, let's release all these. We have a ton of these things backed up of all the bribes that have been going on from Congress have paid off, you know, pages and hookers.
Yeah. $27 million. It's some huge amount.
It's a huge amount. If you're going to release this one report, let's release all the reports and let it go.
Yeah.
And I think she's right.
Good idea. That would be fun. Good for the show.
Oh, that'd be great fun.
Good for the show. And I bet you
Nancy. It'd be great for this show.
Bet you Nancy Pelosi has a couple of them on her name.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yes. And then there's this report, which I'm troubled by both parties in our country about this.
Donald Trump's team criticizing President Biden after his decision to commute the sentences of most federal death row inmates to life in prison. A spokesperson for Trump's transition team saying, quote, "These are among the worst killers in the world. And this abhorrent decision by Joe Biden is a slap in the face to the victims, their families and their loved ones. President Trump stands for the rule of law, which will return when he is back in the White House after he was elected with a massive mandate from the American people." Early yesterday, the White House announcing Biden is taking 37 people off a federal death row, not commuting three individuals. One of two brothers responsible for the Boston Marathon bombing, Dylan Roof, who killed nine people at a historically black church in Charleston, South Carolina, and Robert Bowers, who killed 11 at Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue. In a statement, Biden pushed back against the use of the death penalty at the federal level, saying, quote, "Make no mistake, I condemn these murderers, grieve for the victims of their despicable acts, and ache for all of the families who have suffered unimaginable and irreparable loss. In good conscience, I cannot stand back and let a new administration resume executions that I halted."
This is so troubling because on one hand, you have the Democrats and Biden with a moral issue, saying we can't kill people, but we all want abortion.
And then this has always been the classic irony, both the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yes,
because the Republicans are pro-life except when it comes to executions.
Yes, it's like how does
and the
this
Democrats
work?
Are pro-death. Yeah. Except when it comes to executions, it's just like what?
Pick a side.
And then Biden screws this. I think is that there's some other people that came on and gave testimony about the testimony. They came out and discussed this on these shows. And it's like, if Biden is going to do this because he's so adamant about the death penalty, why did he leave the three guys still on death row?
Yeah.
If you're going to do it, you let everybody off. You don't have, you don't pick three guys out. So, well, you know, these guys, they draw the line with them. It just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's against my morals, any kind of death. But if you're going to do it, give us the television rights so we can broadcast live. Both
you've
the
always wanted that. You know that's
I want to broadcast.
The bonanza, the billionaire move.
That's right. We want the television rights to the executions and the abortions. It'll end people's thirst for death forever.
But well, that's probably but true. It's a positive thing to
a ratings bonanza. I'm telling you, it would be great. They used to do that. They used to have the executions in the town square.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
I know.
Then we're gonna hide it now. Hide it.
So I have a clip that's interesting. Now I don't know that this is true. It looked like it was a PBS clip, I think, because they showed the video, and this is distressing, and at the same time, I like to see it done or somebody do a scientific version of it instead of this rando thing. It could be bull crap, but it doesn't surprise me if it is true. This clip is the lizard DNA clip.
Okay. I wanted to see what would happen if I sent my pet lizard DNA into 23andMe. And so with the help of my wife,
We extracted enough saliva to send off in the mail. We were so excited to see the results. After about 3 months, we were shocked. My lizard was 51% Ashkenazi Jewish. He was also 48% West Asian. This was really interesting. They also gave us a little bit of his background and his history, what he liked to eat, etc. Let us know which animals.
Yeah. I don't believe in these DNA tests anymore ever since we sent off two separate tests for our dog and they came back wildly different. I just don't trust it.
I think it's bogus too. But I can believe that they'd send a lizard saliva in and get Ashkenazi Jew, which apparently everybody in the world turns out to be a certain percentage of that.
Yes.
And that doesn't surprise me since the company is founded by the woman who is married to an Ashkenazi Jew. No, I mean, the whole thing is a setup.
There you go. But it's 23, they're not even in business anymore.
I think they're still doing testing.
Oh. No. Why would anyone say that?
It doesn't mean they're not bankrupt, but whatever the case.
Okay, we heard once again, this is 2024, the hottest year on record for climate change due to climate change. And it was interesting to see that it had not snowed in the Alps, in the portion of the mini Alps where we went for my brother-in-law's birthday party. There was snow there for the first time in 5 years, but it's still the hottest year on record. And they were trying to keep it up over there on NBC.
It's the picture-perfect Hollywood holiday. A white Christmas full of snow and wonder. Movies like It's a Wonderful Life.
Merry Christmas!
Home Alone. Elf. And countless more. And before the silver screen came Silver Bells, White Christmas, and other iconic songs connecting snow and Christmas in our collective American psyche. But now, the idea of a white Christmas may become a thing of fiction.
It's over.
This week, mostly everyone, coast to coast, experiencing warmer than average temperatures. A big reason for the difference? Climate change. Typically, the highest chances of a white Christmas in the U.S. are in the upper Midwest, Adirondacks, and northern New England. And in the West, higher elevations like the Rockies and Sierra Mountain ranges. But climate change is continuing to drive up temperatures across the nation. Just last year, the National Weather Service reported only about 17% of the lower 48 experienced a white Christmas, with 1 inch or more of snow on the ground, the lowest number since measuring. That started in 2003. Some of the biggest cities up north, like Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and New York City, haven't seen snow on Christmas Day since 2009. The Environmental Protection Agency studied why and says in almost 80% of locations, they're getting less snow and more rain.
But whoopsie.
Some might find it great news. Either way, the National Weather Service office out of New York officially declaring it is a white Christmas for New York.
Look at that.
Yay.
First time since 2009. There's a tweet. So they actually sent people out to measure at Central Park this morning at 7 a.m. And for those of you not familiar, there is a technical definition of a white Christmas. You've got to have 1 inch of snow on the ground. And again, this is all for bookkeeping. It can be relative. I mean, if it's me and I look out the window and I see some snowflakes flying around, I'm calling it a white Christmas. Right. But this is for the books. First one that we've had since 2009. And actually in 2009, we had 2 inches of snow on the ground.
So due to climate change, it snowed, I guess.
What a crock.
It really is. And when I guess people don't believe it anymore. It's just too bad we're spending so much money on it. All right. To get this, to wrap this show up, John, I see you have them. So
TikTok, I'm going to give you a jingle. TikTok, you don't stop.
Talk. TikTok.
I got some clips, but I mean, I could push through these around because I have some. I have a couple of news. Well, I wanted to play the. Yeah, I have two other ones.
I
got a couple of TikTok clips.
I gave you the jingle.
Yeah, I know you did. But you didn't get cued to do that. You just did it.
You didn't press the button.
I know. I got this button here and I didn't press. I just want to put. play the climate mammoth found. I think this is interesting because you talk about climate change. I had a climate clip.
I should have seen it. You're right. The climate mammoth story. It's important. It's big. Everyone's talking about it.
Scientists in Siberia have unearthed what they say may be the best preserved body of a woolly mammoth ever found. The 50,000-year-old remains of the female baby mammoth are complete with flesh, skin, and bones. She's believed to have been just a year old when she died. They found her in the melting permafrost, which has been accelerated by climate change. That's led to more prehistoric discoveries in recent weeks, including the 35,000-year-old mummified body of a saber-toothed kitten, also in Siberia. Kitten. It was so well preserved, a lead researcher said its fur was, quote, surprisingly soft.
Due to climate change. Oh,
climate change is great.
There shouldn't be petting dead animals. You get bird flu that way.
Don't pet the dead animals, people. Stop it.
So I thought climate change, that was a good, that's a good side of climate change. I don't know why they don't see it as a good positive thing.
And it was a kitten. It was a woolly, what was it?
A saber-toothed kitten.
That's a new one. Saber-toothed kitten.
And then we have this one other clip I'd like to get out of the way, which is the Ukraine stolen Russian money clip.
Oh, boy.
Officials in Ukraine say they've received the first $1 billion in promised loans from the United States, backed by proceeds of frozen Russian assets. NPR's Brian Mann reports from Kyiv that the funding comes as part of a $50 billion loan plan created by G7 leaders last summer.
Ukraine's Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal said on social media the first $1 billion have arrived. That's out of $20 billion in loans expected from the U.S., with an additional $30 billion in support slated to come from other big industrial G7 countries, including Britain and Canada. We thank our American partners and the World Bank for this important step toward justice, Shmyhal said. The arrangement allows countries to support Ukraine's economy and military with massive loans, with payback coming from revenue from Russia's overseas assets frozen after the 2022 invasion. Russian officials have condemned the arrangement as fraudulent, posting on social media that loans and other support for Ukraine will prolong the war.
So what do they do with this money?
They're stealing money. I just find it deplorable.
Yeah, but they're going to spend it on war stuff on us?
Well, I don't know. Maybe. I hope so. All right, so I'm going to play. I got three talk clips I can play.
Three? Okay.
Yeah, is that too many?
Well, let's see how they do.
Okay, well, let's start with the trans girl. I don't know if it's a girl or a guy being a girl or a girl being a guy. I guess it's a girl that is trans somehow, but whatever the case, she hates her dad because he voted for Project 2025, which I didn't know was on the ballot. You know, I had voted in this last election. I looked. And I didn't see a vote there for Project 2025, but I guess maybe in some areas there was. Let's see what she has to say.
I took yesterday to be angry and miserable, and I also took yesterday to make the decision to block my father, who will still end up seeing this. So, hi, Dad.
Oh, boy.
And yes, I did block him because of who he voted for, because he knows that I am trans, and he knows that I have had two abortions, and he still voted for Project 2025, which to me is reprehensible. I have my husband who loves and supports me to the ends of the earth. I have my friends who love and support me to the ends of the earth. And I have other family members who love and support me to the ends of the earth. And I genuinely do not need anyone else. I realize this is something not everyone is able to do safely. And I'm very grateful for my ability to do that safely. I cut my mother off until the day she died. And I can and will do that again.
I find it all
Isn't
sad.
That terrible?
I find it very sad.
She's a sad person. These people are all sad.
Yeah.
There's another good example. This is the Christmas candy lady.
Christmas candy lady. Okay.
I just walked some Christmas candy that my neighbors make every year and leave on people's porches. I just walked it back over to their house and stuck it on their porch and walked away. That's unlike me. But they've had their giant Trump Take America Back Again flag up for months. They know my daughter's transgender. I've tried talking to them about it kindly and gently, asking them not to do something that would basically destroy my child. And they didn't care. So at this moment in time, I feel that it would be really hypocritical of me to accept a gift from them. I don't care that it's Christmas, okay? Make Christmas every day. Give my daughter the gift of safety, a bathroom she can use, and her name, and her gender. How about that? Give her that. And then you can do all the candy you want. Until then, you can take your candy back again.
You know, the common theme here is narcissism. This is the common theme. These people are narcissists. It's all about them. It's not about her daughter. And the other one's not about her. It's about her. And I should, you know, so we were at breakfast at the hotel in Florence. And we're sitting down and there's a whole bunch of people there. It's a busy, you know, it's a buffet breakfast. And right next was this table with mom, dad, and two kids. And these kids, they're noisy. They're running around, you know, which would you ever let your kid run around in a restaurant?
No.
No, of course not. You say, shut up. You're bothering people. So the dad is just looking into space while mom is on her phone the whole time. She's on her she's completely oblivious to the kids, to her husband. And then I think the father said maybe one thing, like, hey, be quiet. And then it switched. And then she was off looking into space and he was on his phone. I mean, there's something inherently narcissistic about a generation that's grown up with phones. And by the way, why are you putting this on TikTok? You know,
big question. I think that's a very interesting observation. I've always felt the same way. Why are you
narcissism?
Defining narcissism. Why are you putting this on TikTok? Why exactly? What does it accomplish?
Well, it's narcissism, and people pay attention to you and post comments like, "Oh, girl." Big thing, and Tina was showing this to me. The big thing this holiday season, the Christmas cheer, is a post that goes like this: "This is a really difficult post. This is really difficult for me to tell you." And then it's, you know, about, you know, my mom died, my dog died, my sister died, you know, I lost my job. It's like, why are you doing this? And I can only conclude the same thing. It's narcissism. And they thrive on getting the, you know, you're a victim. And by the way, it's mainly white women who have these horrible stories. And they're always, this is really difficult. And they're crying. I think that just they don't have any victim cards, so they need to be a victim by something horrible. And, you know, horrible things happen in your life. It happens. But they need to put it on TikTok or on Reels or X these days. Everything has the same video scrolling behavior. And it has something to do with very, very deep narcissistic behavior.
I think you can blame the phones.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Since you mentioned women, I do have the same thing, only as a guy.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you can visualize what this guy looks like.
Do I need to visualize him?
There's always this kind of piggy-like face on all these people, the women and the men.
Hmm.
But this guy, this is the dude who's done crying.
Oh, gosh. Okay, dude.
I'm done crying. My sadness is over. My anger has set in. I am a very petty person, and I am very proud of that. Love it about myself, actually. And so I say this in the most disrespectful way possible. I don't care if you are my family. I don't care if you're my friend. I don't care if we've been friends our entire lives. You can literally go fuck yourself if you voted for Donald Trump. If you are so sad about your groceries being expensive, get a better fucking paying job. Do better in life. Get a fucking education. Do something. Because you're fucking stupid. And I hope you go jump off of a fucking bridge.
Okay, we need warnings for these clips because kids listen to the show with their parents. And it's all I don't care. I.
Yeah, no, this, no, you're
you know,
nailed it with the, it's all narcissistic.
Yes.
And it's pathetic.
All right, let's play the logged in girl because I saw this one. I thought this was pretty funny.
Oh, okay. Now we switch gears.
I liked her.
That's funny you saw it.
Yeah.
So we switch gears here. Instead of bitching and moaning about Trump.
Yes.
Or having to disown your parents because of the way they voted, because they have to vote the way you want. This is also, I think, narcissistic, but the target is different, and it's actually quite funny.
I'm so tired of logging into things. I'm so tired of it. I can't believe I'm going to have to log into things for the rest of my life. Just let me see my things. My things are right there. Just be logged in. Could we just be logged in for once? And don't get me started on the keep me logged in checkbox. Okay, this is the close elevator doors button all over again. I know bullshit when I smell it. If I ever see the person that programmed that little checkbox, it is absolutely on sight. I just want to be logged in. And all you cybersecurity people that told the websites that we need to be changing our passwords every 5 minutes, you're next. I don't care if that makes me safer. I will go ahead, hack my shit. You're gonna hate what you find, okay? I just would rather be logged in.
And if one of you smart ass little punks comes into my comments and tells me I should be using a password manager, that the keychain will fix all of this, okay?
I wish, fucko, this can't be the future.
I liked her.
Yes, that was pretty good. Okay, we'll finish with that.
The keep me logged in box is kind of a hoax. I have to agree. That thing rarely works for me either.
It works once in a while.
Yeah, people don't want
that. Yes, it's the closed elevator door button, which is usually not hooked to anything. Yes,
exactly.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda. Imagine all the people who could do that. Oh, yeah, that'd be fab.
Yeah, on No Agenda.
We do have some meetup reports coming and a rundown of the meetups that are on the way. And of course, everyone wants to stick around for John's famous tip of the day. But first, we're going to thank every single producer who supported us financially in our value for value model, $50 and above.
Sorry.
Your excuse.
What I did, by the way,
you snapped close the spreadsheet.
I had clicked. I closed the. By the way, it shows how fast we get back online. I had clicked instead of shrinking window.
You clicked the disconnect button.
I disconnected us.
I didn't even see it. Wow, clean feed, man. Those guys are good.
I'm back.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, we do have a few people to thank, starting with Brian Shop in Hayesville, Kansas. 12345. One of our best numbers.
Yes.
John Kralik, Kraljic. He's in Northport, New York, and he gave $102 switcheroo donation. He gave twice.
Hmm.
And one switcheroo is for Anthony Kraljic, and the other one's for Peter.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, that was very nice.
That's cool. That's cool, bro.
Dame Patricia Worthington, she's in Miami, Florida. She's an old friend. $100. Merry Christmas, she says. Jason Marrer in Vancouver, Washington, $100. Smartest place in the world to live. Kevin McLean, you don't have to pay state income tax. You don't have to pay sales tax by driving across the bridge to Portland.
Nice.
Kevin McLaughlin in Concord, North Carolina. There he is. 8008 boobs. He's the Archduke of Lunar, lover of America and boobs. Eric Mackey. In Blairsville, Georgia, 8008. Sir Tooth Fairy, Valparaiso, Indiana, 8006. You know what that means?
Crooked boobs.
Or something. Brian Kaufman in Scottsdale, Arizona, 7575. Dame Rita in Sparks, Nevada, 6733. Matthew Elwart in Weatherford, Texas, 6006.
6733 Jiggly Balls, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Never caught on.
I wonder why.
So certain things don't catch on. 6006 kind of catches on. That's small boobs. Zachary Maywood in Los Angeles, California, 5555. Cameron Ling in North Branch, Minnesota, 5510. Susan Sorin in Nunnem, Netherlands.
Noonham. There you go. Noonham.
$55. And by the way, everyone's wishing us a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. So is she.
And we love it.
Or he. Robert. Sir Lineman in Anna, Illinois, 5333. It's also the net, Sir Lineman of the Net Raleigh Hawk.
Yes.
Samantha Lumendu in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 5272. And everyone's wishing us a Merry Christmas. Steve Myers in Williamstown, New Jersey, 5272. Alexa Delgado in Aptos, California. That's a $50 donation. And the following are all $50 donations, name and location. Next is Stephen Jeanson in Lake Oswego, Oregon. Jeffrey Fraze in Moraga. Oh, Moraga. Should come to the meetups in Albany. Moraga, California. Melissa Alvarez in Ponte Verde Beach, Florida. Brett Denton in Boise. Samuel Cannerday in North Riverside, Illinois. Amy Galinas in Burien, Washington, right by the airport. George Wushit in La Vernia, Texas. Brian Emin Heiser in Lancaster, California. Keith Hubbard in Plymouth, Minnesota. Worn Out Night in Calexico, California. Worn Out Night. He's in San Felipe. Leanne Shipley in Covington, Washington. And last on the list, good old Sir Greg in Newport, North Carolina. That's our producers, well-wishers, and people that help keep the show going, and especially show 1724.
Thank you all very much. You are the reason, along with your compatriots under $50, who we did not mention for reasons of anonymity, you are the reason that we are doing the show, a brand new show, live show for you on the 26th, Boxing Day, second day of Christmas, as they call it in Europe, and right after Christmas for you Americans. We're happy to do it. And you are not listeners, you're not fans, you're not audience members. You are producers of the best podcast in the universe. Many people like to produce with money, which is what producers do. Others like to give us time and talent, sending us all kinds of things and doing things that are helpful to the show that save us money. It's very much appreciated. And of course, if you want to, and even if you sent in a nice donation above 50, please consider setting up a sustaining donation. They really do help. You can do any amount, any frequency of recurrence. Go to noagendadonations.com. Thanks again to our executive and associate executive producers who supported us with big money today at noagendadonations.com. Once again, noagendadonations.com. Say it three times and you'll always remember. We congratulate Dylan Lang, who turned 33 on the 20th, and Sir Yogi wants to wish his Dame Janice a very happy birthday. She turned 66 today, and we say happy birthday to both of you from the best podcast in the universe. It's your birthday, yeah. No title changes, no nights, no dames. We just go straight into the meetups.
No agenda meetups.
Wind up the year. The No Agenda meetups are still going strong. People hanging out together, human to human, mano a mano, womano to womano. It's what you need, your connection. It always gives you protection. These people you meet at the meetups will be your first responders in any type of emergency, like the grid going down. And here is a report from the ITM brunch.
Hi, this is Alex Happy in Virginia. We're in Hopewell. Trains good, planes bad.
Hi, this is Rosalind from King George. Shout out to Blonde Squad plus Trisha, and let's see what 2025 has in store for us.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Trail Chicken. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all.
Hey, Jeff from Springfield. Happy Merry Christmas, John and Adam, in the morning.
ATM boys, thank you for your courage.
Guten Morgen. Frohe Weihnachten. Ed from Studley, Virginia.
ITM, Marshall from Logosil, Virginia.
Christopher and King George, happy to be at our first meetup in 8 months.
Hey, this is Sir William of West Pennsylvania from Alexandria.
Train's good, drone's bad.
This is Tom Starkweather. I have not been at a meetup in more than 6 months, and this recharged me.
Yes, you get recharged from the meetup. You get recharged by hanging out with human beings. Put down the phone, lift your head, go to a meetup, as they did in Los Baños, California, for the Resist We Much meetup.
This is Commodore Sir Robertson of Two Sticks at the Resist We Much meetup at Me and Ed's in Los Baños.
Sir Montauk here, having a great time with great people and great pizza.
All right, this is a dude named Ben, Duke of San Francisco, getting ready for the eventual disclosure, or Project Bluebeam.
This is Sir Recalcitrant, Crazy Steve II, and I just want to wish my wife, Rose, a happy 17th anniversary as of yesterday. Yes, Adam and John, we got together the same year. You two dudes Woo! Created the best podcast in the universe.
And we never had a fight. Actually, we have, and I always won. Merry Christmas!
In the morning!
Yeah. Very nice to hear. Lovely. The meetup started this morning in Dallas-Fort Worth, the Mid-Cities meetup at 11:30 as the Bourbon Street Bar and Grill, so I hope to get a meetup report from them for Sunday. The Fort Wayne, see, this is for, oh, I'm sorry. My mistake. There's nothing today. That's for Saturday. There you go. So that will be taking place 11:30, and that's in Bedford, Texas. The Fort Wayne Club 33 year end Man and Cheese meetup. Man and Cheese meetup 333 at Casa Grill and Bar in Fort Wayne, Indiana. That should be a good one. And then on Sunday, New Year's Eve, December 30th, well, we will be doing a show. Is Sunday New Year's Eve?
No, Sunday is not New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve is the New Year's is
Monday.
On
Monday.
No, New Year's Eve is Tuesday.
Tuesday. Well, these guys are nuts. Oh, I see what they call it, the New Year's Eve. You're confusing the podcaster. New Year's Eve, and I like pizza, Steve. That's the whole meetup title. 3:30 on Sunday, Bald Man Brewing in Eagan, Minnesota. Oh, that's Steve Bienanstra. He's our pilot. Go and hang out with him. He has lots of cool stories. Also coming up in the new year, Raleigh, North Carolina, Colorado Springs. We have Ronan Park, California, Yukon, Oklahoma, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Cincinnati, Ohio, Eagle, Idaho, Keene, New Hampshire, South Slocan, British Columbia, Scandinavia, Charlotte, North Carolina, Tri-Cities, Washington, Adventura, Florida, Rockville, Maryland. I used to live in Rockville or near Rockville. Albany, California. Hey, John, February 1st, Albany. Albany, California. That's near you. You should go. Are you going? Are you, You going?
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
Cool. 23rd, Orlando, Florida. This is February. Then March, St. Petersburg, Florida. Safenum, the Netherlands, March 29th, May 18th. Wow. Go to noagendameetups.com and get the full list of every single No Agenda meetup that's taking place. These are producer organized. It's like TED Talks, only a lot cooler, and you can get drunk. Noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You wanna be where you won't be, triggered or held to blame. You wanna be where everybody feels the same.
It's like a party. And at this moment in the show, we like to select the ISO that we'll be using to close out the show. Once again, I'm falling down on the job, doing very poorly with my ISOs. But I do have one, just one, from an earlier clip we played.
No, no, and double no.
That's really all I've got. It's pathetic.
Okay, I got better ones.
It's pathetic. Well, I know you got better ones. You came.
So I have one that I took the original and then I edited it so it'd be shorter.
Oh, okay.
So I have two versions of the same clip.
Okay. All right.
And so it's one and two. Is this show over one?
Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year's. The show is over.
It's too long. It won't fit in. It's 5 seconds. It won't fit in the outro.
Well, I have it down as 4 seconds.
Well,
let's speed it up.
Okay.
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy New Year's. The show is over.
Okay. It's a contender. I'll take it. Yeah. And what
That's
else?
2 seconds.
Yeah, that'll do. That'll do.
Okay, let's try these other two and see if they're better. I got done.
Yep. Okay. We are done.
Not bad.
And then overall ready.
No, it can't be overall ready.
No, I think.
Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year's. The show is over.
I think that's the winner. That's an obvious winner. And now, ladies and gentlemen, time for the top of the show, John's tip of the day.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCB.
Great, but Eddie Brennan.
And sometimes Adam.
Well, as part of the tip of the day, it seems a new segment is the complaining about the previous tip of the day discussion.
Oh, who does this?
I guess.
But who's complaining?
Well, we have Puerto Rican listeners.
Ah, and they're complainers, eh?
Oh, yeah, they're complaining about a lot of stuff. The Puerto Ricans complain. This note is kind of interesting. This came from one of the complainers, Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
And he complains
Carlos the complainer, huh?
Carlos the complainer.
Yes.
His last name starts with C, too, so it's going to be very good. Carlos the complainer talks about Adobe, Goya Adobe. The seasoning is Puerto Rican in origin, and it should be mentioned it's Puerto Rican. And he went on and on. Him and two other guys mostly complained bitterly. But Carlos, I think, is the one who said Mexican food's no good. It's tasteless, and all they do is put hot sauce on everything. And of course, then another guy from Puerto Rico says, well, you know, the problem with the Goya Adobo, I said to everybody, I'm just giving a tip for a spice. I don't care the details here, but okay.
All right.
So they go on and on about they would be not crediting Puerto Rico. But in this note, I went back and forth with Carlos more than once. And he said, he talked about the adobo. Then he said, on a different issue, you can call the company American. He's talking about the company started in Puerto Rico, or supposedly, or the guy came from Puerto Rico. It's a New York company. I'm part of a majority of the people of Puerto Rico who want to become a state of the USA.
Yeah.
In Puerto Rico, we are born American citizens. We have the same passport as you do in the States, and there is no such thing as Puerto Rican citizenship.
That's correct.
We are subjected to the same federal laws and have federal courts here. The main difference is that we don't pay federal taxes.
Yes, that's it.
Which is attractive to millionaires of the states that come here more to avoid paying federal income taxes and receive excellent benefits of not paying or just paying a low local income tax. Another issue is that we can't vote in the presidential elections, but we can vote in the primaries of the GOP and the DMC.
Yes.
Or DNC. We don't vote in the election of the commander in chief, but we serve in the armed forces.
Yes.
So the thing is, so if you want to become a state, but you don't have to, right now you don't pay federal income tax?
What are you complaining about? Shut up already.
Just so you could vote for the president? That's a swap I'd make.
You got a good deal as far as I'm concerned.
So yeah. They start a new thread.
Yes.
But Carlos is of the group that wants to become a state. And
I think you should.
I admire our Puerto Rican listeners. Yes. I guess there's quite a few of them.
Yeah.
Because if three of them wrote in, that means there's at least 300 that probably agree.
And we'll let you in if you pay taxes and back taxes. I think you got a good deal going. But I know a lot of people who went to Puerto Rico during COVID and they stayed. They never came back. They loved it.
Yes, it's supposed to be gorgeous.
A lot of trash, I hear.
Yeah, it's a lot of garbage. They can't seem to figure out what to do with it.
They don't have a federal garbage pickup. Oh, anyway, we love you guys.
So this week's tip is from Nail Tech. It's the Nail Bandage, Instant Nail Bandage.
Whoa.
It's got a redundant name. It's if you get it at Amazon, they're $6 and 30 cents, which is screwball price. But so you crack a nail. Now, Mimi has her own way of doing this, but these things work great. You crack a nail, which I did because I opening a can of the liquid death, I might add.
Mm.
I cracked the nail and on the can, and which is a pain in the ass because you got these catches on everything, you know what I'm talking about. And so you put these it's a little piece of plastic. They're hard to get off. They're packaging. It's a screwy product, but you get this little piece of plastic and you put it over the nail and you can't see it. It's completely invisible, but it covers up the it seals the little the crack of the nail. And I recommend this highly. Now Mimi has she told me this is crap, and what she likes to do is you got a cracked nail, you put
super glue.
Yes. Super glue on the nail, and then you coat it with clear nail polish. And if it's a real bad crack, you can put a very thin piece of fiberglass over your nails and do the same thing, glue it on. And I'm thinking, I don't think so. These little patches are great. They work fine. So that's my tip.
Once again, what are they called? What is this called? This
Nail Bandage. It's available on Amazon by Nail Tech, T-E-K.
I have a tip of the day request. I had for the longest time, and I think I bought it on an airplane, and I can't find it anymore. I had a scale that you use to weigh your baggage. So you hold it in your hand, and it has the little digital readout, and then you clip it onto, you hook it onto your luggage handle, and it tells you exactly how much your luggage weighs, which is handy, particularly with, I don't want to be that guy who's unpacking his suitcase at check-in, and I can't for the life of me find them anymore.
Wow, I'd never heard of such a thing, but it's a great idea for a product. It'd be very easy to make nowadays with the digital MEMS that do weighing, yeah.
Yes, and I would love...
Well, I'm sure there's something out there that do the trick, and one of our listeners and producers will give us the answer to that. And I should mention one of my experiences at playing around in Europe. It went like this. So I go into your bags are 2 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
And I said... Oh, what's that going to cost? Well, they had to fish. It's going to cost $25, $30. I said, hold on a second. So I unzipped the bag. I took the 2 pound laptop out and stuck it under my arm, zipped the bag back up, put it through the scale, and said, okay, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
So then I took the bag off, put the laptop back in, and checked it.
These days, you can't even pay extra for overweight. It's a workman's comp thing. You cannot do that. It's like if it's over 50 pounds, you're screwed. You got to take it out, and they will not check your bag.
Well, there's always workarounds. Don't overpack. There you go. Well,
there you go. And that's your tip of the day, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Tipoftheday.net.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JC.
Created by Danny Bernetti.
And sometimes Adam.
He still hasn't called me. I'm a little irked about it.
I'll tell him to call you.
Yeah, well, shoot me an email. Send me a DM.
What email?
Send me a DM.
The DM will work.
Slide into my DMs, Bernetti. And that concludes...
On Insta or on Twitter or on...
No, X. He's always DMing me on X.
He doesn't... I don't think he uses X much. I think he goes there once a month.
Well, it's been a month. We did everything he asked. It's typical Hollywood.
Do this for me.
Yeah, well, typical.
Typical Hollywood. Typical Hollywood. Arrogance.
Yeah. That concludes our broadcast day. Sunday, I will be coming to you back from the Texas Hill Country. Excited to be back. Excited to see my dog again, for sure. End of show mix is coming up from D's Laughs and Joseph Grillo, who did a great Hot Luigi mix. And up next on No Agenda Stream, the modern podcast apps and trollroom.io. Even though they were very mean to me on Noster, Sir Spencer and Dame DeLorean with bowl after bowl. See, I forgive. I can forgive. Coming to you from 15 feet below sea level here in Schiphol, Amsterdam, the Netherlands. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where the weather is mixed, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Remember us at noagendadonations.com. Until the next time, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey and such.
And I understand why you believe crazy things, and I understand why you think crazy things. I'm the same way.
Derek Birch, can't remember if he has a moniker.
And Matty J.
D's Laughs.
What's the next thing they gonna fear, monger, another virus?
virus, climate change, or world hunger. They passing out billions in every direction, not a TV show. But we divided by intersection. Marvin asking 71, what's going on? Finishing the year in 22, where did we go wrong? Pay attention to everything, the truth reveals itself, is what my old facts said. I say it to myself. Met the man, you said, hey, release your delf. It's Christmas time, I'm always moving like the elf on the shelf. But I don't play these childish games, only one I play is with my nephews. I caught off all my childish dames, forgot about the guitars like Eddie Hazel. Funkadelic is funky, not fresh like homegrown basil. To all the producers, thank you for the three T's, time, talent, and treasure. I think we all agree. John C. Dvorak and my man Adam Curry hosts the best podcast going into 2023. Value for value, international lifestyle, twice a week, yo, we love it all the while. You put a number meaningful to you, just donate, don't be a shape-shifting, you know who. Shout out Maddie J for the instrumental, we going mental.
I don't know, but it was, I mean, it was one of the more serious ones.
It was way back in the day. This one now is probably, he probably got the same one that I got like a month ago, which I'm not vaccinated. Well, I got the Johnson, I got the ghetto vaccine, and you know, I got the Johnson & Johnson right when it was first available, which that was probably just like syrup, nurse for all I know, something like that.
It's hot, Luigi the killer. The Italian Christmas killer.
This Ivy League hottie named Luigi is the Robin Hood that we never knew that we needed.
Honestly, it's beautiful, and I agree with him.
The children have a brand new star. His name is Luigi, the cutest little hottie. All the boys think that he's sweet. He shot a CEO right in the back out on the street and rode a city bike into the park so naturally. Oh, jing-a-da-jing. It's hot, Luigi the killer. Jing-a-da-jing. The Italian Christmas killer.
I'm just in love. Because this is like regular everyday person becoming our hero, our vigilante.
Luigi wore a mask to hide his killer Hollywood face. He made a big mistake asking the server for a date. A camera caught him clear as day. He let his mask come down. There was hot Luigi eating a crispy Mac hash brown. Oh, jing-a-da-jing. It's hot Luigi the killer. Jing-a-da-jing. The Italian Christmas killer.
I listened to Luigi's Manifesto this morning 3 times, and I cried. Honestly, it's beautiful, and I agree with him.
Whoa, the radicals love Luigi. He's really quite the ham. He gained 1 million followers on X and Instagram. Now all the normal people hope he gets what he deserves. Let's hope they throw the book at him. A lifetime he will serve. Oh, jing-a-da-jing. It's hot Luigi the killer. Jing-a-da-jing. The Italian Christmas killer.
His initial 827 followers on Instagram grew exponentially Monday as we watched. By 3 o'clock, more than 32,000. An hour later, 53,000. By 5 o'clock Monday, more than 71,000.
Hey, Luigi, where you going with that gun in your hand? Take the gun. Leave the cannolis.
The best podcast in the universe.
Yeah, mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year's. The show is over.